These shows aren't some genre and, ooh, they're entertaining and, wow, this guy's intense. Why do you think I'm intense? I'm under total attack. I've been hunted for decades by these people. They've attacked my whole family. Our family's never been stronger because we're not wimps and we understand we're doing God's work. But I'm in a war and you better realize you are too. Do you understand that? My God, they've killed over 30 million people with the poison shots. They flood us with fentanyl. They're absolutely in every major public and most private schools with grants, secretly brainwashing your sons and daughters to think they're another sex and make them totally mentally ill and then be mutilated, chemically or surgically. It is a devil cult. It's the same program worldwide. It's BlackRock. It's the New World Order. It's the transhumanist on record. They say the future's not human. They're building this nightmare world, and we're simply saying no, and we're valiantly fighting. Because on the other end of this, if we fail, is total enslavement and a nightmare hellscape. So just understand, you think I want to do this? You think I want to fight 18 hours a day? You think I want to do all this just so I can act tough? No, I've got to do it. Somebody walks up to me and punches me in the nose, or somebody walks up to me and it punches my kid in the head. I'm not happy about it, but I'm going to get pissed off and I'm going to go after them. It's the same thing in politics, folks. How much are you going to take? You got to get vocal. You got to get informed. You got to get engaged. You got to spend money and support the people that are tip of the spear. You got to amplify all that, and you should get vocal, and you should get engaged as well. I know a lot of you are, but, man, you got to do this with urgency. You're like, oh, that sounds like work.
I don't know, man. That sounds like a lot of work.
No, you're meant to do this, and the future is so dark if you don't. But we're turning the tide. We're winning. But they're going to false flag. They're going to pull out the stops. They've already implemented the Podesta plan. Everything I told you is happening. But they're totally freaked out. And all over the news just saying, he's on his last gasp. Get him off. The Democrats, the senators, just get him off. Just get him off. Just shut him up. Because I got their number. I got their name. I got their ass. And their little minions, most of them are compartmentalized. They don't know how all this works. They're getting decompartmentalized. A lot of them aren't pure evil, are waking up and joining us and whistleblowing. Or just walking away. You can do that too. Just walk away. Run up the white flag. Because you're in a war against us, and we're winning, and we're going to win. And where your bosses are taking you is hellish. The only way you fail is not joining us. Admit you're the bad guys. Some of you can admit that to yourselves. You're not totally turned over to evil yet. Be like Darth Vader. Throw your political system lovingly, nonviolently down the reactor shaft. Become honorable for once. It's exhilarating. It's a blessing to fight evil. It's so animating, as Thomas Jefferson said, the animating contest of liberty. You have to live the life of Thomas Jefferson to really read Thomas Jefferson. And then it's so much stronger. There is a white supremacy problem. And it's weird, old, elitist white people that are literally manipulating everybody, killing each other so they can stay in power. And it pisses me off when I sit there pissed off watching this, watching these wild-eyed, crazy people that want to kill me because what color I am. I know who brainwashed them. I know who wound them up. I know who sent them. I don't blame the dumbasses. No, I blame Carbo and John Podesta and the Clintons and Obama and the rest of them. That's who I blame. I know they got whistleblowers out the door at the DOJ. The problem is they don't have prosecutors with testicles to do the job. Can you feel the future? Can you feel the danger? Can you feel the destruction? I certainly do. But I don't think you dumbasses that serve evil do. See, you're in a new ball game. It's a new era. And you know what Thomas Jefferson said? The blood of patriots and tyrants waters the tree of liberty. And I don't want that. And there's a good chance we can avoid a lot of that. But not according to the left. They are just whole hog, let's get it on. And so, you know my view, I think it's your view, not out starting fights, not trying to get in trouble. But if people are looking for trouble, they came to the right place. If you want a war, you got one. If you have some need to be stomped into the ground, well, you came to the right place with the American people. Because America was asleep, and you thought we were intimidated while you pissed in our faces and did all this to us. No, people were asleep. The spell is lifted. It's over. You need to learn to look at a weather vane and see which way the wind blows. It's blowing against you. And this wind, this headwind, is unstoppable. The only question is, are you smart enough to understand that? Surrender is your only option. Surrender now. Give up now. Stop now. coming up in just the next month or so. It looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors. And that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself is InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live from the InfoWars Satellite Studio here in Austin, Texas. We got a lot of news to cover for you on this Friday broadcast. We'll be joined in the third hour by Tiffany Cianci. She is helping to lead a major protest this weekend, and she'll tell us all about that and how you can get involved trying to stop the takeover of our federal government by all the people that we elected Trump to keep out. So we got a lot of news to get into. I'm going to try to open up the phone lines for your calls in the second hour. Can we take phone calls here? Yes, I think we can. I'd like to, because I'd like to hear from you. As of course, this, we're 1 week away, folks. This time next week, I will be coming to you live, but under a different banner. And it's very exciting, but we're also trying to make the most out of our last week under the InfoWars, under the InfoWars flag. Where to even begin? You know, we got so much stuff to cover, and there's so many like individual stories that we can get into. Is it just my Twitter algorithm? Is it just my X algorithm? Because it seems to me like every single day I wake up to the exact same stories over and over and over again. Every single day I wake up to learn about some horrific, horrible, at this point, rather common video of usually either a Muslim immigrant to Europe or a black person or a illegal immigrant here in America just brutalizing white people endlessly. Just brutal and horrific. And it's just like every morning you wake up and it's just like, oh, here we go again. Oh, blood running in the streets. Great. What else is new? And then on top of that, you've got just complete stupidity from the American government, sort of making constantly the wrong decisions. I mean, it seems like every week now, we get to hear about some other core, fundamental, foundational component of Trump's campaign, the promises that he made, just falling by the wayside. Here we have one from, this is date wrong? This says January 22nd, 2025. This might be an older one. But the story that was supposed to be is the fact that they are essentially not even trying to do mass deportations anymore. I probably just searched the headline and got the wrong story, but it's Department of Homeland Security announces ICE arrest policy reversal. This is actually kind of interesting because this is the reversal from January 22nd, 2025, where I guess the Trump administration reversed a Biden era policy that prohibited ICE and CBP agents from making arrests in places like schools and churches. But it's that type of policy that has now been reversed once again. So I guess we got like a year of being able to arrest people where they are. And now we're going back to, look, we're not going to arrest the non-criminal aliens. We're not going to go after them in school. We're definitely not going to be there at the courthouse, you know, to arrest them when the liberal judge tries to let him go and avoid deportation. We're just backing down across the board. And it's absolutely pathetic that we're doing so, especially since the brutality, the brutalizing of American citizens by illegal immigrants only seems to be going up. And I know we're going against the grain here. Typically on Fridays, we try to have a little bit more of a lighthearted show. I try to start off the show, especially with a little bit of fun. I'm going the opposite direction this time. I'm going to start off the show today with like the worst story I've heard in a long time. And it's brutal and parental, advisory warning for you, because it's pretty horrific. And, we'll break this down the other side, but this is just the type of thing that America and Americans are being subjected to on an almost endless basis, practically every day, from one of the tens of millions of people that made their way over our border when Joe Biden decided just not to enforce the law for a little while. And Alejandro Mayorkas decided to open up the gates to the country to a bunch of foreign psychos. And I'm not kidding. They are psychotic. And here's an example of one just from down the road here. In San Antonio, Texas, clip 17, a 24-year-old foreign savage, military-age male, an illegal invader from India, I guess, tried to eat a baby. I'm not even kidding. Let's watch.
As a San Antonio mother in shock, her 3-year-old daughter is recovering tonight from wounds from a total stranger. It all happened Saturday at Espada Park while Gabriela Perez and her family were fishing. That's when a man appeared out of the woods and began punching Perez and grabbing her by the hair, causing her to drop her daughter. That's when it is said the attacker started biting the little girl's face. Perez says it was a scene out of a horror movie.
I think whenever he was, like, everybody was already there, I got up and I was like, this is a f-ing zombie movie. Like, what the heck?
Vias was tackled by onlookers and held until police arrived. He is charged with injury to a child with intent to cause bodily injury. San Antonio police say it's unclear what led to the attack.
And white Americans will soon be a minority.
Looks like we accidentally jumped to the next clip. I don't know. Maybe that's a good clip to go to now. I don't know. Maybe we should go to that clip now. But no. Totally horrifying. I mean, again, just what has happened? What has happened to our country? I mean, a story of a family, like you couldn't ask for a more quintessential Saturday afternoon at the park fishing in the duck pond when all of a sudden some insane zombie from India comes stumbling out of the woods and starts biting your child's face. Oh, what the hell? And so, of course, the question is, is this guy a, like, there's two options here. There's two potentialities now that this man from India, this 24-year-old from India hanging out in the woods in San Antonio, probably doing drugs, I would hope. I hope he was on drugs. I mean, good Lord. But hey, maybe not. Maybe it's just what he does for fun. He's just stumbling out of the woods and finds the first baby he can to, and starts trying to eat it. I don't know. It sounds like drugs to me, but maybe not. Who knows? Either, there's only two options. Either this guy is a criminal, a lifelong criminal with a long rap sheet, as a lot of these guys are, which just represents, again, the just total failure of us to deal with even the worst of the worst people. And I imagine the type of guy, you know, typically your life of crime, I don't think it usually starts with trying to eat a baby. That seems like kind of high up the level. Like, I think first you start off like harassing people, spitting on people, attacking people. You work your way up to baby eating, I would hope, I would think. So I imagine he's probably got some sort of rap sheet, you know, a mile long, or not. Cause the other option is maybe he's one of these non-criminal illegal aliens, which we keep hearing that, sure, go after the criminal illegal aliens, but the non-criminal illegal aliens, what's the problem with them? I don't know. Sometimes they try to eat babies. So there's that. The question is just like, What are we going to do here? What are we going to do exactly? Because if the Trump administration's not doing mass deportations and these people are still here in massive numbers and they're still affecting our economy to the degree that they are, what are we going to do about all of this? Because it really is getting worse and worse and worse. I don't know if we have the video, but we had it yesterday and I'm sure we can pull it in. I'm sure you've seen it if you spent any time online in the last few days. This video, New York Post headline, sickening video shows New York City teen stomp on girl's head after she refused to give him her number. The disgusting video shows a teen slamming a girl to the ground and stomping on her head after she refused to give him her phone number, according to police and sources. Now, you've now seen the image on the article. If I didn't tell you the image, would you have been able to guess the races involved, I wonder? I wonder. Yeah, black guy, white girl. What are we surprised now? The video circulating on social media shows the 14-year-old brute. The brute. That's one thing to call him, I guess. You can call him a brute. The B word. I'll say the B word. The brute confronting the 15-year-old girl. So here it is. So he's standing in her way, blocking her path. She shakes her head. No, I'm not giving you my number. Well, prepare to die then, lady. So he walks up behind her, you know, makes sure his friend is filming, picks her up, slams her to the ground. She already seems like she might have been knocked out from that. And then the head stomping. Then he walks off. Big man. Big impressive dude. Now, interestingly, and maybe we can grab this video. Because again, you know, I see this type of stuff. I don't even want to cover it. I don't like covering this stuff. There's other stuff I'd rather talk about. I'm also, you know, not the type of person that's going to take this and extrapolate it out to demonize all of one type of person. But when you see this stuff over and over, and then you see that the mother of this kid is defending him and saying he was acting in self-defense, she was bullying him, then it becomes more than just an instance of random violence. It becomes a matter of policy. It becomes a matter of decisions being made and choices being made and ideas being used to, you know, direct behavior these days, being utterly wrong. I'll knock the blank out of you right now, the bully says as he blocks the girl's path in the crosswalk while one of his pals eggs him on, saying, do it. You stand right there. He orders her, pointing at the ground at his feet. She tries to go around him and puts an arm out and pushes her back. The tense clip shows, get the F away from me. She tells him, turning around and walking away. The masked goon. He's a goon. He's a brute. So lots of words. Then grabs her from behind, picks her up in the air, and slams her onto the pavement. While she lies on the ground helplessly in pain, he stomps on her head and walks away. The girl suffered a concussion and was taken to EMS by EMS to Harlem Hospital in stable condition. The bully was arrested and charged with assault. He's due to appear in family court on Thursday. And, of course, his mother is there to defend him and say that he's an innocent, good boy that didn't do nothing. She actually said, I believe the exact words she used were, a humble Christian boy. I'm not even kidding. The humble Christian boy just stomping on women's heads. And again, not to, like, anyway, I just, this is the thing I don't understand, because I've been looking a lot at the data around, like, young women going super liberal, and it's something everybody sort of knows. The data on it, when you actually look into it, is really horrifying. In fact, we have a video that we'll go to that's an interesting interpretation of the data. But, like, in your own life, in your own, you know, personal experience, does your own life and your own personal experience not, you know, tell you about the world? Do you not learn from it and start to see patterns and start to recognize certain consistent things? Yeah, the suspect's mom, Selma Allen, described her son as a humble Christian and claimed the girl had bullied him at school. She was being a bully to him. That's it, she told the outlet. He's been complaining about her. I bring it to the principal's attention, but he don't address it. The way my son is being bullied, he doesn't want to go to school. So, like, throw her in jail, too, while we're at it. Like, what is she, you know, she's clearly a drain on society as well, the type of person that's going to lie like that when we have it all on camera. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's actually absurd that these people just, I don't know, man. Okay. It's just crazy. But, like, how much did he didn't provoke nobody. If you provoke him, he will lash out. Yeah, it's her fault. It's her fault for denying him. Look, if she had just let him have his way with her, she wouldn't be in the hospital. Okay. So whose fault is it at the end of the day? She provoked him by refusing his romantic overtures, okay? She should have just given in. That would have been the right thing to do. But, like, how long did we have to hear about America being misogynist, about America being a rape culture, about all this crap? And of course, it's the most sort of stereotypical cliche thing ever, but yeah, it's the very women who are, you know, freaking out and want there to be an HR department in every office to monitor constantly the behavior of men who might dare to make an off-color joke or something. Meanwhile, importing populations who apparently literally don't even understand that rape is wrong. Like, you can see videos where it's people like trying to explain that rape is wrong and the people are just like, what? Like, well, I don't understand, but I want to have sex with her. So, okay. So you're importing people like that or, you know, contributing to the justice system that favors people like this and gives people like this the ability to think that they'll get away with it. I mean, he's on camera. He's like, make sure his friend is watching before he slams the girl on the ground. And you just got to wonder, like, what's going on in their heads? And like not the girl that was attacked, obviously she didn't deserve anything, but for like the liberal women out there, 50% of whom are on one SSRI type or another, just like, can you not tell that every time you get your way, things get infinitely worse? Is that not clicking at a certain point? And it's also weird because there really is sort of an unspoken aspect to this that I find myself even like, I have trouble sort of breaking the taboo of like talking about stuff like this. But it's also a common thing. It's probably gotten a lot worse since I was in school. Like, I went to public school in Houston, Texas, a giant, you know, 4,000 person school, 4,000 students. And, you know, it was like a third Hispanic, a third black, and a third white. And there's a story recently about this like adult illegal immigrant who was in a high school, like said he was a high schooler and has now been arrested and charged with like molesting girls at this high school. And I was just thinking back to my time in school. And it's like, sort of, I don't know. Again, I like have trouble even talking about this, but like I remember since middle school, even pretty white girls are harassed literally all day, every day by minorities, like constantly all of the time, like groped, propositioned, like literally constantly every single day. I saw with my own eyes all of the time. Is that not like click to people? I mean, the differences in culture, the differences in behavior, the differences in like when, you know, one population loses their virginity and starts, you know, engaging in sexual acts, like it's different for different populations. And you've got populations, the minority populations in this country start having sex at a very early age. They're very like, look up the rates of, you know, incest and stuff in these groups. I mean, it's significant. It's very high. And then you got them just like preying on white girls all the time, continuously. I think the white girls are like, they feel bad about feeling bad about being assaulted constantly. And they like internalize it and they go, it's all men. It's all bad men. So, you know, I think there's a reason why leftists, especially leftist women, make themselves ugly. Like there really is this sort of survival mechanism that's at work where it's like, yeah, I'm going to pierce my body, but I'm going to pierce my face all over. I'm going to get tattoos. I'm going to, you know, wear gaudy makeup and color my hair. And it's this, I don't know, like subconscious, like understanding that the more attractive they are, the more abuse they get. And there's this, and I just see it constantly. Again, I'm just kind of rambling here, but you know, the Me Too movement was another one of these instances where you had a particular industry in Hollywood, a particular person, Harvey Weinstein, and sort of the group around him that was helping him to carry out his crimes. And when they were discovered, instead of going, all right, what's it about this guy or about this industry or about these people that's wrong? It became, yeah, this is all men. All men do this. All men are bad. All men have to pay for this. So suddenly you got, you know, some dude working in an office who's getting written up because he, you know, didn't appropriately address the
the female in his office because they've been fired up on this rape culture nonsense. And everything is inverted. Everything is backwards. Everything is wrong. And the racial aspects of it are very pertinent, especially because, like, you don't have to tell white boys on average to, like, not assault and impose yourself on girls. It's not really that much of a problem if you lay it out in comparison. So what happens is you have a bunch of programs, a bunch of, you know, social programming, a bunch of, you know, school courses, like all this stuff telling all boys, you have to stop approaching women. You have to stop trying to hit on them. You have to stop being attracted to them. And it's like, okay, there's only one population that's even going to listen to that. And it's the only population that doesn't need to be told it. So do you understand that, like, the nice guys, the nice kids, the nice boys are the ones who are going to be, like, scared now to go up to women? And so the only ones, like, the only people that it benefits to tell you get a class of boys, the entire school, you sit them down, you tell all of them, you are bad for trying to approach women. You're bad for wanting to look at women. If you try to hit on them, you're practically raping them. How dare you? Now, out of that whole population, you're going to have a pretty big portion, the ones who would hurt women, attack women, hit on women when they don't like it, impose themselves on them. And they're not listening. They don't give a damn. They don't care. If they cared, they wouldn't do it in the first place. You don't have to tell them. Like, this is the whole absurdity about, like, educate boys that rape is wrong. Okay, who? Who are you educating? Are you educating the migrants that come over that genuinely don't seem to understand that? Because they actually do need to be educated. American kids, we don't really need to be told it. And so all they're doing is, like, making it even worse. So now you've got a bunch of girls that they want to be, and maybe they don't want to be hit on, but they want to be attractive to boys. And all the boys that, you know, might have to work up the courage to go ask them instead are going, I'm not going to do that. And just sort of isolate themselves, which is why everybody's becoming lonelier. Whereas the aggressive boys that don't give a damn anyway are only going to be more, you know, empowered to do it. And all their competition has been scared away. It's just like, what are we doing here? What is, like, what? Are we thinking at all about the consequences of this down the road and the fact that these types of scenes are going to become way more common in the future as we bring in more migrants, as the social fabric of our society continues to weaken? And so it's one of those things where, you know, what I'd really love to see is just sort of your classic, you know, Christian morality coming back into force, being imposed socially, not from a, you know, law perspective, and set everything right. Because you know what happens if there's no intervention and this continues is, like, you're going to have to adopt Islam just as a necessity. Do you understand what I mean? Like, it's getting to the point where it's not even like a religious thing where it's like you're not allowed to go out because it's haram. It's more like women aren't going to be able to go out without a male escort because they're going to be beaten up if they try. Like, that's where we're going. And there's no reason why we wouldn't get there. There's no barrier preventing us from backsliding into a culture where, you know, women have no protection. The law is no protection and they got to protect themselves. So, hey, you want to go out, honey? Grab your uncle or your husband because it's dangerous.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade, take 30 minutes to kick in. I've given this to 500 people. Only 3 people didn't feel it right away. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
Personally, I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. I was telling you, I've had a little bit of a cold for the past few days, under rested. It felt like my brain was working at 50% capacity, just felt slow. And now, what's it been, a half hour or so, it feels like I'm back up to 80%. So yeah, that's my experience. Feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them.
You and me, honest, I know you will be. Because we're always trying to find a better methylene blue. If you've got one that's better, you said you've taken it before. Did you feel the same thing with the other methylene blue?
No, with other ones I've tried, I didn't have a perceptible difference. Yeah, didn't notice anything.
Well, I got to tell you, Bigly, I said, go find me the best. They said, this place doesn't sell it to people. They sell it for medical dyes for arteries instead of like iodine, radioactive iodine. They use this for tracking blood clots or something. And I said, okay, great. So you got to deal with them? I said, well, let me get it. And I've taken a bunch of different brands before. It didn't really do much. I was like, brrr, when I did it. And I was like, so they hit a home run with this. So you're saying you've taken, we didn't talk about this beforehand. We just asked you. You've taken others before, though, did not feel like this.
Yeah, that's true. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it.
And yeah, my understanding, you mentioned this, methylene blues, they're not all created equal. Some, I believe, are like a fish aquarium grade.
Yeah.
But they sell it to humans. So what you found, I'm stoked to really.
Look, I love Bigly. Their rule is go out and get the best. Most of our products are private label. It's already top rated. So I said, get the best methylene blue. So I think we've got the best. JB's here didn't even know this backstory that you all know. You just saw what just happened to him. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
We have two new products at TheAlexJonesStore.com that are guaranteed to work and deliver healthy results. One is Ultimate Energy. It's very simple. High-quality fusion of organic caffeine that is time-released, then with a very strong dose of high-quality L-theanine that relaxes you and gives you clarity and focus. A lot of people take it for tests. They also take caffeine. You take the two together, it gives you smooth, continual release energy for up to 10 hours. A fabulous product, Ultimate Energy. And then, when it's nighttime and it's time to chill, Ultimate Chill, a big dose of L-theanine and a big dose of ashwagandha root that gives you rest, relaxation, and better, deeper sleep. That's also great for your immune system and your whole body. Good, clean energy and good, clean sleep. These two products together are amazing and are now available at TheAlexJonesStore.com. While you're there, get the ultramethylene blue, get our incredible iodine, T3, bovine colostrum, and so much more at TheAlexJonesStore.com, funding the second American revolution worldwide and taking the globalist on head on.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. Keep your hand on your
gun. Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Infowars.com, band.video. Of course, you support us by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com. It's your final week to win both the Ford Raptor and the custom H1 Hummer, plus $20,000 in cash for every $1 you spend. You get 100 entries to win both of these amazing cars. Plus, we're giving you a free $10 to use on anything at TheAlexJonesStore.com. This offer ends Monday, the 27th at midnight. So go now to TheAlexJonesStore.com. You get free $10 gift on us to use on whatever you want to spend it. Of course, you get an extra $10 if you're a VIP member. You're entered to win the incredible cars. There are these new awesome trench knives that are on huge discount. You can get two of those, get an additional 25% off. Lots of ways to save at TheAlexJonesStore.com. But it's the only way that you can support us and keep us on the air. I got a lot of videos to get into. I just think, you know, one of the reasons, you know, obviously InfoWars has always been just pure Americana, and, you know, still, and nothing's changing about this, the idea of our mindset, our belief system, being applicable to literally everybody of any race, color, and creed, because it's a universal value set about liberty and the non-aggression principle and just all good stuff that like literally everybody should be on the same page about. And it's always great seeing anybody of any race, color, or creed who, you know, can grasp the concepts that we struggle to get across here. But at the same time, recognizing that obviously a lot of attacks against us are on the basis of race, and understanding that that is for a reason, and that basically they're trying to eliminate white people in particular because of our history of rebelliousness and nonconformity and individuality that is at odds with their desired world construct of abject tyranny and subjugation. Now, again, doesn't mean that everybody of every race, color, and creed can't also, you know, love liberty. I think that's sort of the thing about liberty is everybody wants it for themselves. It's just you have to also want it for other people. And there has to be some sort of, you know, symbiosis there, some sort of mutual respect, because we've been too nice. I think we've been too nice for too long. And I think it's starting to have some major damaging effects. I'll give you an example. And again, that's why I'm bringing this up and then just, you know, thinking we need to be more explicit about this sort of stuff. The video I'm about to show you was forced to be deleted from the official account that posted it. The UK, I guess, posted this video. Let's not go to it quite yet. Don't ruin the surprise, crew. Because obviously this video was beyond the pale. It was too much. It was frankly offensive. It made a lot of people scared of Nazis. It made them very frightened and scared, and they're afraid that videos like this could lead to, you know, an uptick in white supremacy. You know, it's very dangerous stuff. White supremacy, obviously the most dangerous set of beliefs the world has ever seen, and this video obviously contributes to it. So, you know, jokingly this time, parental advisory, you know, because this is dangerous. I mean, this was not allowed to stay up. The UK deleted this video out of respect for the people that said this is deeply offensive to us that you would dare put this on video. Okay. Does the crew know what video I'm talking about? Let's go to clip number 3 now. In the UK, this video was taken down after complaints that it might lead to white supremacy. Let's watch.
Where do you come from? Do you put the kettle on?
Okay, so for our radio listeners, it's just a bunch of white kids. It's white children. See, the existence of white children is unacceptable to the New World Order. All of these white people in their home country with their own flag painted on their face, marching around and being silly, this is a terrifying reality. Yeah, I mean, we might as well be watching a burning cross, okay? We might as well be watching the Nuremberg rally, okay? Because clearly this is Nazi. I mean, yeah, looks Nazi-ish to me. I mean, look at that. All of these children are white. Do you understand how dangerous that is? How terrifying that is? So, I mean, really, really think about that. This isn't like, oh, some, you know, crazy radical said something strange about this. The government of the UK posted this up thinking it was an innocent celebration for the World Cup. Right? That's what this is. It's the English, you know, it's a celebration for the English team going and competing in the World Cup. They're throwing soccer balls. And it's a bunch of little English kids cheering them on. And the UK deleted this. They agreed. They said, you know what? You're right. This was unacceptable. How dare we show a video of the natural native demographics of England? We will take it down. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, the fact that a school still exists in the UK that has this many white kids is like kind of a miracle. But they're not just mad that the school exists and isn't overwhelmed by foreigners from Bangladesh. They're like infuriated that somebody would put this video out. They called this Nazi. They said they're scared of this. It's literally elementary school kids being silly and dancing around. But it's all white people, so it's dangerous and it has to be stopped. So I have trouble even expressing this in a world, in a culture where we are constantly browbeaten, shoved down our throat, this idea that, like, you know, the Holocaust didn't start with burning Nazis. It started with their dehumanization. It started with this, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, okay, well, what does it mean when you can't even show a video of your race without people demanding that you take it down because they hate you that bad? Are we not on the path towards something horrifying? I mean, how many times have we heard this over the last decade? That it's like, you can't allow anything to be said about the Jewish people because anything bad said about them is the first step to the Holocaust. Sure, you might not think it's that bad that you said that Larry Fink is Jewish, but it's that type of sentiment that leads to the Holocaust. So let's tamp it down. Meanwhile, white people are not allowed to exist. We're not allowed to be amongst each other. It's considered a threat and hateful and will be destroyed. Now, if you can't show white kids, how long do you think it'll be till you can't have white kids around? And it's already gotten basically to that point. So this is what I mean, is when it comes to, like, racial stuff, who's standing up for white people? White people aren't even standing up for white people. Now, if this was happening in any other race, white people would be the first to stand up for them. For some reason, we can't take our own side, and that's ridiculous. And we have to, because, again, things are getting absurd. They're getting insane. They're getting almost laughable. I mean, it's not funny, but, you know, you could call it laughable. University founded in memory of dead white men, now rejecting white men. So there's a university in Canada called Memorial University. And as Dan Robertson on X puts it, on the first day of the Battle of the Somme, 800 white heterosexual men of the Royal Newfoundland Regiment went over the top. Only 68 answered roll call the next morning. Now their male descendants cannot work at Newfoundland's only university, which is named in their honor. Okay, so 800 men went over the top, the Battle of Somme, 732 of them died. And then in memorial of their heroic sacrifice of their very lives, this university was founded and named Memorial University in their memory. And now you can't work there if you're a straight white man. You gotta wonder, would they have gone over the top if they'd known what they were actually fighting for, who they were actually in service to? Because it wasn't their progeny. It wasn't their nation. You know, this event, where they're no longer hiring white people, white men, at Memorial University, is what they're actually fighting for. Again, it's just like, what? When are we just gonna put a stop to this? Because that's all that it takes, is us just not going along with this and not allowing this to happen. Why are we allowing ourselves to be imposed on like this? And when are we going to snap out of it? When are we going to finally snap out of it? Because then I've got this. This is crazy. This is a crazy story. It's a crazy post by a guy named Rambo Van Halen. So Rambo Van Halen is responding to a post. Rapid Response 47 put up a video of FBI Director Kash Patel that says the charity that supposedly fought the Klan funded the Klan. The charity that supposedly fought neo-Nazis funded neo-Nazis. The Southern Poverty Law Center ran a methodical, calculated scheme to defraud their donor base of $3 million. Okay, so in response to that, I'm not even sure why this is a response to this, but here's what he said in response to this. And this goes right into what I've been talking about forever when it comes to Jews and Jewish Americans in particular. Rambo Van Halen says, like most American Jewish kids, I went to a Jewish summer camp. It was a good time. Archery, canoeing, crafts, first kiss, some cultural stuff. I forget how many years I went. It was two or three summers in a row, I think. One night, in the early morning hours, the camp counselors woke us up. They said it was an emergency and gathered us in the dining hall. One of the adult counselors told us that the Arabs have gotten a hydrogen bomb and destroyed Israel. Needless to say, we were all freaked out. Some of the kids who had family in Israel, were wailing, screaming things like, no, Auntie Rachel is dead. But the counselors calmed us down. We all stood in a circle and held hands and said prayers and sang some songs. And then they told us, ha ha, Israel was not destroyed tonight. But they reminded us that this was something that could happen. And that's why we as Jews need to remain hyper vigilant about the people who hate us. Then they put us back into bed. Good night, kids. Needless to say, this was pretty effing traumatizing. And even today, when I see the words Arab and nuclear in the same sentence, that anxiety comes roaring back, and it's immediately followed by anger and resentment over what they did to us. Because this is what brainwashing is. In the 1980s, when I was a kid at summer camp, no Arab state was even close to getting a bomb, and no Arab state is close now. Logically, from a rational standpoint, Israel was and is safe. But the point of waking us up in the middle of the night to remove logic and fear from the calculation, to remove logic and rationality from the calculation and replace it with fear. They tried to break our little brains, and it probably worked on most of the kids. Now, this was a ham-fisted, counterproductive way to go about things because the experience gave me some skepticism. All the experience gave me was skepticism about the Zionist project, but that's another story. Many years later, as an adult, I met a woman at a party. It turned out that she worked for the same summer camp that I attended as a kid. I told her, wow, I went to that camp. She asked if I wanted to get involved, which means give money, but I declined. Then I told her why. I told her the story about Israel getting nuked and how it was an effed up thing to do to a bunch of little kids. She turned white. Stark white, and sheepishly mumbled, I'll never forget this, we don't do experiential learning anymore. Which I think is a very useful term. It's actually the positive spin of false flag. It's a positive spin of a false flag. It's experiential learning. Okay? See, America didn't understand the threat that the Arabs were, and so 9/11 had to happen to us so we could learn what the threat was really all about. That was experiential learning for all of us, where they lie to you and subject you to psychological trauma to manipulate you. Experiential learning is a very nice phrase for that, very nice euphemism. So she says, we don't do experiential learning anymore. He says, I'll take her at her word. Maybe, as she says, they don't do experimental learning anymore. They probably don't do it because they found something better because the zealots discovered the media hoax. How many brains were broken by a bunch of chuds carrying tiki torches in Charlottesville? Was it the hundreds of millions more? They took the experiential learning out of the dining hall and spread it to the entire world. Incredible stuff. Okay, so that makes sense. So that's what he's saying. So he's saying that by funding the neo-Nazi, you know, tiki torch march, in Charlottesville, that was experiential learning. That was fabricating the threat of Nazis to scare everybody into submission. So this is horrible. Like I really do feel sorry for this guy, and I feel sorry for all these kids that are subjected to this. That's crazy. That's crazy. And really think about how crazy it is. Kids are already vulnerable when they're at camp. They're away from their family. They're away from their normal systems. They're always going to be a little bit anxious in general about being at sleepaway camp away from everybody that they know. Then you wake them up in the middle of the night. You tell them this horrible thing and convince them of it. And then you say, oh, we're just joking, but it could have been true. It could have been true. Now, there's a couple interesting things about this. For one, I remember my experience at sleepaway camp didn't have anything like this. There were no psychological traumatizing, brainwashing horror stories in the middle of the night. That's crazy. But the things that did happen, like, I don't know, it's just kind of hard to explain. Like, I actually remember there was like a traumatizing event at the camp that I went to. And now looking back, it was nothing. It was nothing. But I was like a good kid. And my camp had this book they called the Devil's Book. And it was like, when you did something really bad, they'd put your name in the devil's book. And anyway, not to make a long story, but like, you know, as a little kid, our counselor was like, we're going to sneak out and we're going to go to the mess hall and steal cookies. And, you know, I was probably like 8 years old or something. And the way the counselor is playing it up, it's like, if we get caught doing this, our names are going to go in the devil's book. Like, it's going to be, we got to be really good. And of course, he's just messing with us. But as kids, you're like, oh my God, I don't want to go in the devil. I don't want to get kicked out of camp. I don't want to, my mom will never talk to me again. You know, like it. And so just you, I imagine, I'm like, what would it have been like as a kid when already just something stupid, like we're going to go steal cookies from the mess hall. You know, as a little kid, you're like, that's like overwhelming. And it's like, which again, now you look back and you go, oh, okay, that was nothing. They were just messing with us. We were just little kids. But like now imagine telling those little kids, everyone you know is dead. Everyone you know just died in a firebomb and you're taking it really seriously. And yeah, they're all dead. And it's like, I can't imagine what that would do to kids. That is the craziest thing. It's so crazy. It's such an offensive and aggressive psychological deliberate trauma-based programming. That's what it is. Trauma-based programming. It's the most effective, you know, method of population control anyone's ever designed. And so it is what they do to us on a large scale. Actually, now that I understand why he was commenting on the SPLC thing, I think that's actually a very sort of insightful connection that he's made there. But it's so effective. The psychological trauma programming is so effective. Even though this guy tells this story, even though he relays it, I think with the appropriate gravity about how effed up that was and how traumatic the whole thing was. And he clearly was deeply affected by it. And yet, in the comments, he's actually defending these people. He's actually downplaying it. He's sort of equivocating and going, well, okay, it was bad, but like every religion does it. And it's like, no, dude, our religions don't do this. That's crazy. No, that's crazy. And you should call it out. You should call it evil. You should call it for what it is. It's religious extremist programming that you were subjected to as a child. And there's no reason to soften that condemnation. There's no reason to minimize that fact. You should really, if anything, you know, be standing on that. Yeah, the Arabs got a hydrogen bomb and destroyed Israel. But yeah, that's what I mean though. Like think about when you were a little kid hearing ghost stories and they were so stupid. I mean, the ghost stories I remember, my God, that same camp, they told a ghost story about a serial killer with an axe that had a laser pointer on it. So then the camp counselors they'd have secret laser pointers and would show them around and the kids would all scream and stuff. Like that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. It doesn't make any sense on the face of it. But when you're an 8 year old kid and you're sitting around a fire and you're hearing noises in the woods, and your camp counselor is like, and he had a laser pointer so we could always hit him right in the head. As a little kid, your brain is firing on all these chemicals. I mean, it's just picture what it was like as a little kid and how scary things were when you didn't understand stuff. And to tell a bunch of little kids, your whole family is dead now. So my response to this on X was, this guy recounts a harrowing story of psychological trauma inflicted on American children by Jewish extremists. He then tries to equivocate and downplay it because even a guy like this who thinks he woke up to the Zionist brainwashing is still incapable of breaking the programming completely. He still feels the impulse to protect these people. He still feels like he has done something wrong by telling the truth about them. And that, like, if you look at his comments underneath, he's like, oh, you know, well, sorry, I didn't really mean to, you know, make it sound that bad. And he tries to equate this experience to Christian indoctrination. So he says, well, this blew up. A few notes before I mute the post. One, indoctrination is common in just about every religion. See the Passion of the Christ, which is why I have distrust of all organized religions. The movie Passion of the Christ. You're talking about the Hollywood movie about the Passion of the Christ. You think that is the same? You think that somebody going to an R-rated movie, paying a ticket, sitting in a theater and watching a dramatic portrayal of Jesus' life is somehow the same, the equivalent of taking children out of their beds in the middle of the night and telling them that their whole family was obliterated by a bomb? What? This is what I mean. This is what I'm talking about. This is the this is the thing. Like, I don't get this. No, no groups, other groups don't do this. That's crazy. I know some people are like, oh, you should look at the documentary Jesus Camp or whatever. Okay, fine. There's like some extremist evangelicals that'll like work up their kids' emotions. I still have never seen anything like this. I've never seen anything of this level. Because that's crazy. But this is how it works. It's like, okay, so you were psychologically traumatized by people deliberately implanting political beliefs in you that you still have not broken out of. Political programming through trauma-based abuse. And instead of going, wow, these people are evil. This was bad. I can't believe they did this to us. And this ideology is wrong. It's all religion. So all religion must be wrong. All religion is wrong because your religion did this to you. Therefore, all religions are wrong. Because, hey, indoctrination's indoctrination, right? A Hollywood film about the life of Jesus. It's basically the same as ripping kids out of their beds in the middle of the night and telling them that their whole family is dead. It's basically one and the same, right? What the hell are you talking about? That's insane. That's crazy. So why can't he acknowledge that? Why can't he say that? Why does he have to equivocate? Why does he have to say that other people are just as bad? They're not, though. We're not. Then he says, yes, Palestinians indoctrinate kids. And no, two wrongs don't make a right. Nobody should be doing this. Okay, that's good. I don't think that's exactly accurate. I guess it depends on where in Palestine you're talking about. But the kids in Gaza, they don't need to be woken up and lied to about being under threat. They're actually under threat. They actually are watching their entire civilization be destroyed. They got to experience what you experienced as a lie, as a piece of programming, that 5 minutes that they let you think that your whole family was dead. That's the life of the Palestinians that are being victimized by the very people with the mindset like the ones that were traumatizing the kids at camp, who are convinced that they're in a life or death war and that this is worth it. And that's what you really have to understand. Why would they do this to children? Why would they psychologically traumatize their own children? Because they are trying to instill in them the fear and the otherness that makes them controllable. They're trying to implant in them the idea that everyone around them wants to kill them and they're only safe with their fellow Jews. They're only safe if they support Israel. They're only safe if they support the Zionist cause. Otherwise, that feeling that you felt in the middle of the night at camp, that's going to be real and it's going to be forever. It's a control mechanism that they wield in the most abusive and outrageous ways you can imagine, and everybody should be against it.
If you suffer from low energy, if you're not feeling the energy that you used to feel in your younger years, you should try this product and see if it makes a difference for you, because there are many causes of lack of energy, but one of them can be a lack of cellular energy support through pre-methylated nutritional supplements like this that can help you. You can go buy a bottle of vitamins at any store, you know, any Walmart, anywhere that's got cheap B12, which is cyanocobalamin, or the cheap B vitamins, or the cheap minerals like calcium carbonate, which is ground up limestone. You know, Alex Jones doesn't use the cheap low-end versions of these products. And I know this as a nutritionist, as a food scientist. I look at Alex's labels and I'm like, yes, these are the high-end ingredients that I would be using in my own formulations. You may not know that the vitamin B12 that's in that formula, which is methylcobalamin, you may not know this, but that ingredient alone is crazy expensive. I think the last time I looked at the pricing of vitamin B12, it was something like $10,000 per kilogram. I mean, it's insanely expensive. And so the fact that you can get a bottle of this for, what is it, like $22 on the alexjonesstore.com, it's unbelievable. I don't know how they're able to get to these prices. They've also got TMG in there. They've got CoQ10 in there. They've got vitamin B6 and so on, also another form of folate in the same formula. The Ultra Methylene Red, and it's sweetened by stevia. So stevia, which is great. It's a natural leaf, you know, sweet leaf sweetener. So really, I'm always impressed with what the Alex Jones Store is doing with their product line. So check it out. TheAlexJonesStore.com, Ultra Methylene Red.
Back, folks. This is War Room. Second hour is on. I'll be joined in the third hour by Tiffany Cianci. I'm talking about a big protest that's happening this weekend. But I want to go to a clip here of Nick Fuentes. He's making the case for basically not voting Republican. And I think he makes a very compelling case. I'm sort of torn about this because, you know, I recognize the threat of the Democrats in power. I think now is kind of the time to do this because it is a midterm year. And so it's not like I'm really worried about the Democrats just having total power, having the Congress and the House and the Senate, or the House and the Senate and the presidency. I think they'd be able to destroy the country that way. Obviously, even if the Democrats win in the midterms, it'll sort of jam up Trump. Like maybe then there's an opportunity in 2028 to like reset the board. I don't know. All I know is that we only have one method of changing their behavior, and that is withholding our vote. So here's Nick Fuentes making the case.
I cannot wait for the Democrats to take the House. They subpoena and investigate Kristi Noem and Lauren and Corey Lewandowski, and they find so much corruption. It's going to make the impeachments during Trump 1 look like a joke. All that stuff about Paul Manafort and the business documents and the Ukrainian phone call. The corruption that they will discover when the Democrats are in the House, it's going to make all that stuff look like a joke. And they're just going to keep stacking it up on top of Vance. We're going to be in our war with Iran. The Middle East is going to be a mess. The economy is going to be a mess. The Trump administration is corrupt. He might even be impeached. You are fucked. And we are not going to bail you out. Sorry. 2026, I'm telling people to stay home. You know what my message is in 2026? Stay home. We got to vote to get back on track. Fuck you. And the guy that posted it, I like the guy. It's not directed at him, but that sentiment, we got to get everybody back on track. Go fuck yourself. You told us when we wanted the Epstein files, we don't need your votes anymore. Hey, wish granted. Remember that? Remember in July of 2025 when Trump said, if you want the Epstein files, you're not a real supporter. I don't want your vote. Hey, wish granted, pal. Wish granted. You wanted it. You got it. F*** you. You want to get it back on track? Good luck. Call Netanyahu. That's the part that I love. They sell us out. H-1B visas galore, student visas galore, no mass deportations, burying the Epstein files. I think Bill Clinton's a great guy. And then in 26, they're going to be begging us for the vote. Hey, guys, we need your help. You know, President Trump needs more seats to keep the agenda going. You know what I have to say about that? You're worried about your majority in 2026. You're worried about losing the House. Why don't you ask Bill Clinton for his vote then? Ask Bill Clinton, ask those 600,000 Chinese students, ask the H-1B workers, ask the Israelis, ask Netanyahu for a vote. He gave Netanyahu $20 billion. Ask him to vote for you. He gave Wall Street the corporate tax cut extension. Why don't you ask them for the vote? You know, ask them. Go and bother them with your campaign ads. Don't bother us because we still have illegal immigrants in our cities. We still have rampant crime in our cities. The job market still sucks. We're not richer. Our purchasing power has not increased. Go ask somebody else because we are not interested. We do want to burn it all down. Correct. You don't want our vote? Wish granted. You're not getting it this time.
Hard to disagree with him. Hard to disagree with him. I mean, Trump did say, if you want the Epstein files, I don't need your vote. So it's like, you're mad at us not voting for him. Be mad at him for basically forcing our hand. Sorry.
If you suffer from low energy, if you're not feeling the energy that you used to feel in your younger years, you should try this product and see if it makes a difference for you, because there are many causes of lack of energy, but one of them can be a lack of cellular energy support through pre-methylated nutritional supplements like this that can help you. You can go buy a bottle of vitamins at any store, you know, any Walmart, anywhere that's got cheap B12, which is cyanocobalamin, or the cheap B vitamins, or the cheap minerals like calcium carbonate, which is ground up limestone, you know. Alex Jones doesn't use the cheap low-end versions of these products. And I know this as a nutritionist, as a food scientist. I look at Alex's labels and I'm like, yes, these are the high-end ingredients that I would be using in my own formulations. So really, I'm always impressed with what the Alex Jones store is doing with their product line. So check it out. TheAlexJonesStore.com, Ultra Methylene Red.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
All right, welcome back, folks. We got a lot of stuff still to cover in this second hour of the War Room. I'm just going over some of the headlines from today. This one, just one of those things. Apparently they announced that Benjamin Netanyahu had prostate cancer 2 months ago. And it's one of these like, okay, so you're basically admitting you have a cure for cancer. Because here's what we didn't see. Here's what we haven't seen. We haven't seen Benjamin Netanyahu going in for any long-term treatments. We certainly haven't seen him be subjected to radiation poisoning and have all of his hair fall out. So how did he cure himself of cancer exactly? Like, this is a very strange story. It says Netanyahu says he hid prostate cancer from public because of Iran war. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Friday that he had been diagnosed with and treated for early stage prostate cancer, but delayed revealing his condition for 2 months to avoid it being used against Israel amid the war in Iran. A statement posted on X, Netanyahu, who will be 77 in October, said he requested publication of his annual health report be delayed so as not to be released at the height of the war to prevent the Iranian terror regime from spreading further false propaganda against Israel. The Prime Minister's annual health report released on Friday said Netanyahu underwent surgery on December 29th, 2024 for an enlarged prostate. The surgery had been reported publicly at the time. A few months ago, during a routine follow-up, doctors discovered early stage prostate cancer. The Prime Minister was presented the option of active surveillance or radiation therapy. He chose to have targeted radiation therapy at Hadassah 2.5 months ago. Israeli strikes against Iran began February 28th. He said, thank God I'm healthy. I'm in excellent physical shape. I had a minor medical issue with my prostate that's been fully treated. Netanyahu said in his statement, adding that when he received the medical diagnosis of a malignant growth, he decided to undergo treatment immediately. Like, but is that not... Like, why did he not lose his hair? Why did he not? What sort of treatment was this? I don't know. Maybe I don't know enough about cancer treatments. It's just very kind of suspicious to me when they're like, oh, yeah, Netanyahu, he has prostate cancer and it's already cured and it happened 2 months ago, but he's totally well now and he's totally fine. And it's like, OK, can we have the cure? Can we also be given this treatment? Because I've never heard of anybody who just rids themselves of prostate cancer in 2 months with no outward sign of treatment. That's crazy. But okay. I don't know. Does the crew know about this? Do I not know about these treatments? Seems to me like prostate cancer is still kind of a big deal, kind of like an earth ending diagnosis, but not for Netanyahu apparently. I mean, am I crazy? I don't know. Maybe the crew knows more about this than I do. Since then, journalists and members of the opposition have raised doubts regarding the completeness of information provided to the public concerning his medical details. Okay. Yeah, I don't, that's weird. That's weird. He has prostate cancer, but now it's cured. So you missed it. You missed his chemo treatments. He did do chemo treatments. It's just they didn't make him lose his hair and only lasted a week. So, okay. What? Okay. Now I want to talk about USAID. Okay. USAID seems to be the one thing from DOGE that actually was legitimately dismantled to some degree, at least. Now there's a article in the New York Times that's yet another sob story, and we've seen a bunch of these, which is interesting because you never got sob stories about the Americans who lost their jobs when their, you know, jobs were sold out from under them to H-1B visa holders. We've seen, you know, gigantic swaths out. You'll never hear a story about the highly qualified, dedicated, and active young men trying to get jobs and being blocked out because of the rush inspired by Black Lives Matter to hire nothing but minority people. But we're getting the sob stories about the USAID because these poor, innocent government workers are no longer making $250,000 for trying to stop AIDS in Zimbabwe. And no, I'm not just making that up. Sarah Miner, 42, who was the senior advisor in the agency's HIV/AIDS office and previously ran health programs in Mozambique, Zambia, now says she helps manage health and human services programs for Fairfax County, Virginia. And it's just all this stuff about how sad they are that they're no longer able to work at USAID. These overweight, middle-aged women are obviously the biggest victims in our entire society. And it's an absolute tragedy that we all care a lot about. Susan Cohen, 57, was making $272,000 a year as a senior vice president of USAID funded nonprofit when she was let go at the end of March 2025. Last month, she had an online interview for a $19 an hour job at Pinsey's Spice Store near her home in Falls Church, Virginia. Okay, so you're doing great. So you're doing all right then. And I can't remember if it was this woman or another one. I think it might have been this woman, but it's like, or no, it was another woman because it was like she worked for USAID and her husband had a NGO whose money all came from USAID. And it's all this type of stuff where it's just like, yeah, they should not be allowed to just be making hundreds of thousands of dollars because their wife works at USAID and can sign off on infinite amounts of other people's money. Like, no, you have to go be productive now. You have to do something that people actually want. And the more you look into USAID, the more you look into the scams that, you know, the welfare scams, the daycare scams. I mean, it's just the classic, like, libertarian idea of just like, yeah, the easiest way to make money now is, I mean, why should you have to make something that you have to entice people to pay for? Why should you have to compete for other people's dollars? Why should you have to prove your worth before you're given money? Just write a one sheet, file an LLC through LegalZoom, and then USAID will write you a $500,000 check. And you don't even have to do anything. You don't have to accomplish anything. There's no return on investment. There's no metric to judge your success by. It's just infinite free money from the American taxpayer for whatever it is that you're doing. Whether it's valuable, who's to say, what it's worth, who knows? But you're getting paid, you know, more than executives for managing the money that we send you. It's insane that we do any of this. And it really is just a shortcut. Like, it's just, I don't know, there's something so just like viscerally off-putting about it to me. This idea that these scumbags are just getting access to piles of gold and they just do nothing for anybody. Or they just have the in, or they just, you know, ask for the money and they're just given it. And it's one of these things that's like, okay, in any other, you know, in an actual productive business, you know, this type of stuff doesn't make any sense. It's like, you know, for most productive businesses, you know, there's going to be like a problem if the business just shuts down immediately. There's going to be people that are need services and they're not going to get it. With USAID, it's like, all right, you're no longer allowed to whatever, go around and give speeches to high schoolers about being gay. It's like, all right, when you cut that off, what happens? Nothing. Absolutely. If anything, things get better. So like, just why are these people earning hundreds of thousands of dollars and achieving nothing? It is genuinely insane. Actually insane. This is it. January 28th, 2025. Amy Ucello and her husband, who also lost his job when USAID funding his nonprofit dried up, rely on food stamps, Medicaid and supplemental nutritional program for women and children that helps with their now 19-month-old daughter. So again, it's just like, so what was his nonprofit? What was it doing? The funding dried up. So like, I just picture, you know, this like big, you know, like water tank of, you know, American taxpayer dollars. And we have to like work our fingers to the bone and we contribute a drop of water, you know, and you do that, you know, millions of people all working day and night. And then half of their money is taken. It's put in the money and it equates about a drop. And then these people are just crowded around the water tank, just slamming hoses into it and siphoning out the money by the hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, what is this construct? Like, I don't know. Something about this sentence just like triggered me. Her husband, who also lost his job when USAID funding for his nonprofit dried up, rely on food stamps. This is the scam about NGOs. So he wasn't a government employee. Okay, so he wasn't bound by the strictures of being a government employee. He wasn't actually, he didn't actually have a job and a salary with the government. He just invented a quote unquote nonprofit and just receive checks from the government. Again, just because it's money with no oversight. Because it's not their money, so they can spend it however they want. And I don't know. I don't know if I'm expressing this enough, but maybe you just have to be able to picture it for yourself. But I literally picture this guy just like at home, you know, in his socks, just like sitting there on welfare, just being like, man, can't believe they cut off my $175,000 a year salary for running my nonprofit. And it's like that alone. It's like, doesn't even matter what the nonprofit is. It's just like, you were paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for running a nonprofit. Do you see a little inconsistency there? That the government as it exists now is basically just like a no-show job scam that the mafia runs. Where they literally is just, yeah, give your husband a $100,000 grant from USAID. Why not? Why not? What are they going to do? Call it fraudulent? Why? There's nothing that you're asking in return for the money. I'd really love to know what this guy's nonprofit was. Maybe we should try to look it up. Ucello. Amy Ucello and her husband, who she worked for USAID, and apparently he ran a nonprofit that just received a ton of money from the government. Okay, but all of this sort of pales in comparison to what USAID actually did, which was overthrow countries for the sake of the American ruling class. And they're still doing it, only now they're doing it internally here in America. So we're going to go to a video, clip number 5. It's posted by somebody named Chaos Coordinator. But it relates to this article from Substack called Inside Job, Blueprint for an American Color Revolution, Part 3, The Recording. And we'll go ahead and listen to this, and then I can break down sort of more to it. But this seems very legitimate, and I have no reason to doubt the authenticity of what we're being presented here. So without any further ado, here it is. This is from the article Inside Job, Blueprint for an American Revolution, Part 3. And it is the internal discussion of the government employees attempting to overthrow our government. Let's watch.
On April 15th, 2026, 39 people logged on to an encrypted Jitsi video conference. They expected the room to stay sealed. It didn't. Operators choose this specific open source platform when they want zero digital footprint left behind. But a recording of that call made its way out and is now in our possession. This document identifies the call's moderator, Jeremy Alexander Zittimer, a former engineer at the U.S. Digital Service inside the White House. His reported 2023 federal salary was over $152,000. The people on this call are highly compensated federal insiders. He was joined by Beverly Schreiber, the deputy director of a group called the Federal Workers Alliance for Democracy, or FWAD. This gathering brought together senior bureaucrats on a private platform to coordinate a strategy that the organization's own leadership expected to stay closed. Before the main presentation began, Deputy Director Schreiber introduced their guest speaker to the room. This transcript shows the exact phrasing Schreiber used. She stated the guest helped with non-cooperation training. Non-cooperation is a precise tactical term, the coordinated withdrawal of labor and compliance, used to freeze a system by refusing to execute the tasks it relies on. FWAD leadership knowingly brought in an outside expert to teach federal employees a specialized methodology designed to freeze their own government. That outside expert was Courtney A. Pompey from the Democracy Renewal Group. Unprompted on the recording, Pompey admitted she has spent the last 26 years working in the international democracy and human rights space. Her professional network traces directly back to the State Department and USAID, specifically a branch known as the Office of Transition Initiatives. This office ran covert influence operations, like Zunzuneo, a secret Twitter alternative for Cubans, shut down by Congress in 2012. Their internal strategies explicitly focus on organizing smart mobs to force power shifts overseas. These are the networks that orchestrated massive, state-toppling civil resistance movements in places like Belgrade and Kyiv. Their theoretical foundation comes straight from the work of Gene Sharp, the academic who wrote the manual on breaking authoritarian regimes without firing a single shot. Pompey operates as an architect of foreign regime change, bringing decades of covert operational experience directly to this private call. This document details the specific training module Pompey presented, a case study of civil resistance inside the government of Poland. She broke down the resistance into a step-by-step process. Step 1. Career officials inside the administration use their platform to publicly warn citizens that upcoming government actions will result in complete chaos. Step 2. Weaponize technical expertise. Bureaucrats use their specialized knowledge of the system to execute strategic whistleblowing. Step 3. Direct non-compliance. Career civil servants simply refuse to hand over the sensitive data their elected leaders request. Step 4. Introduce friction. They orchestrate what Pompey calls administrative drag to grind processes to a halt, making it logistically impossible to carry out scheduled actions, like holding an election. When executed in sequence, these four tactics create a multi-layered administrative barrier designed to paralyze a target government from within. But the experts from the Democracy Renewal Group are no longer training dissidents in Eastern Europe. The exact same vocabulary, the identical cadence, and the three-layer organizational charts used to break foreign states have been fully reconstituted inside the United States. A tactical methodology explicitly built to topple overseas dictatorships is now being aimed directly at the constitutionally elected executive branch of the American Republic. The recorded training demonstrates that internal resistance can be manufactured using a specific professional refusal pattern. The coalition that ran color revolutions in Belgrade, Tbilisi, and Kyiv has turned that apparatus inward, training federal civil servants to apply those same methodologies to the United States government.
So yeah, blueprint for an American color revolution. That sounds like exactly what it is. Again, I'm going off what they've reported, but everything seems to align with what we've seen. And of course, all of this is in preparation of really what they intend to be their communist revolution, which will occur on May 1st of 2028. The OTI is the USAID Office of Transition Initiatives. It's the sub-office whose operational history includes Zunzuneo, covert Twitter for Cubans that ran from 2009 to 2012 before Congress shut it down. They create, quote, smart mobs that might renegotiate the balance of power between the state and society. So, color revolution. That's what it is. There was a bureaucratic resistance to this where career officials within the election administration body itself and the National Election Office publicly warned folks that these changes would create a very much chaotic election environment. There was whistleblowing again, primarily through the expertise of bureaucrats that understood the process. This is what they're describing. You create the expectation of chaos that you then play into. Local government officials, civil servants, career civil servants refused to hand over sensitive voter data. The outcome was that the drag on the administrative process made it logistically impossible to hold the election on a scheduled date, creating a postponement of the election. Now, we've talked before about the CIA handbook on disruption and how, you know, they point out the best way to disrupt things isn't to go in and, you know, try to be a bulwark against it. It's to get in, pretend you're participating, and just start asking questions and causing strife and causing friction and just slowing things down a little bit. And just every decision, just come up with an objection that you don't even have to believe, but just as a thought experiment. Well, might this exclude this type of person? And how are we going to deal with that? Just to slow things down, gum up the works. I mean, this is straight out of the CIA manual for sabotage. And it's been around since, you know, like the '40s. So after Pompey wrapped, Zittimer unveiled the organization's updated mission and structure. He says, for the last several weeks, FWAD convened our entire leadership team alongside 26 federal worker leaders across 18 agencies, a mix of current and former, including 11 partner organizations, 26 federal worker leaders, 18 federal agencies, a mix of currently employed and recently separated, 11 partner organizations from the FWAD operational leader's own mouth. If a congressional investigator, a federal prosecutor, or an inspector general ever wants to understand the scope or coordination inside the federal workforce, that sentence is the baseline. Then he says that agency resistance groups, or ARGs, as FWAD calls them, functionally fill the role of gathering together people from an agency to engage in symbolic or non-cooperative resistance. We call these ARGs. We've realized that ARGs, which historically have been one part of our work, are actually the centerpiece of our entire strategy. The Federal Workforce Organizing Apparatus now has a name, Agency Resistance Groups. The tactic is non-cooperation. The venue is the federal workplace. The strategy presenter is a former White House executive office of the president technologist. Inside the organization's shared services layer, Zittimer named a specific function. He says, immigration gathering and analysis, which also includes a mix of adversarial analysis. This is kind of a know the enemy, understand what the administration is planning to do, and identifying points of leverage for people to engage in resistance. Points of leverage. So again, we saw this under Trump's first administration. We expected this to be the exact type of thing that DOGE and others would help to avoid this go around. But it looks like these people are highly organized within the federal government and are gearing up and getting ready to actually overthrow the government. I'm not exaggerating or being hyperbolic here, because this is one of the things that they said. Quote, if something like that happens again, talking about the day that they woke up and Trump had threatened to bomb all of Iran. And they were really outraged about this. So they said, he described what he saw as a failure of the movement to mobilize rapidly on that day. And he delivered the sentence that are now the primary source editorial center of this entire investigation. So they woke up on April 7th, 2026, and basically was disappointed that they weren't ready to mobilized at that moment, saying if something like that happens again or the day after the election when they seize the ballots and declare that none of that counted, we're going to need the ability to rally people on short notice to not just have parades, right? Not have a festival and demonstration, not a demonstration of our numbers, but maybe a demonstration of our power and actually withdraw cooperation and shut down the country until not just the election results are respected, but until Trump is removed from power. I think aligning around that strategic strategy and building the capability to do that. They're trying to overthrow the country.
Right now is the time to support InfoWars as Twilight. We are shutting down next Thursday night. War continues through all of you. The AlexJonesStore.com is not owned by me. It's owned by Bigley. It owns the Alex Jones Network. They won't be able to shut us down. We have fought them, and we will continue on. But I need your support. The supplements, the methylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, it is all incredible, top-rated, so good for you. You're insane if you don't get it. And we're running a fundraiser here. All the original InfoWars products, we're not going to sell once this goes through. Because even though we're battling in court, they can come back and say we violated it or whatever. So if you want to get original InfoWars gear and the new update, the 1776 line, now is the time. Also, they're running mega sales every day for the next week at Bigley. If you subscribe to any supplement, you can lock it in for 50% off when you buy it into the future. Cancel anytime with one click. Sign up for any supplement subscription. You get 50% off plus a free bottle of either Ultimate Chill or Ultimate Energy Incredible Formulas. Ultimate Chill helps support calm, balance, and focus. Ultimate Energy helps support energy, drive, and mental intensity. Third deal on top of it. Every order gets a free mystery gift with purchase. Biggest sales ever. We want to hire more hosts. We want to expand once this is over. We want to go at least 5 a.m. to midnight every night. We've got big plans, okay? We fought all the way. We rode till the wheels came off. We're going all the way. We're still going to block the onion scammers that got exposed a year and a half ago. They're trying it again. We're going to sue the living hell out of them. Wait till after our guest leaves us. We found incredible information on them. It is so shocking. It's going to just blow you away. Guess what they're into? I don't think you'll be surprised, but it's so bad. You're not going to, I mean, it is the sickest stuff you've ever seen. Out and out Satanism, torturing, murdering children. They love it. They're promoting it. Wait till you see this with Will Ferrell, everything. It's all coming up. But I will continue to fight these people 110%. I love it. I'm built to do it. But I cannot do it without your backing and support. So make the decision now, especially the 99% of you, have millions of viewers a day, that never go to the AlexJonesStore.com to get these incredible items, incredible knives, silver coins, collectibles. It's all there. The AlexJonesStore.com. And it's a free app. The AlexJonesApp.com, on Android, on Apple, it's all there. It's free. Get it. The show's right there in the center of it. You get big discounts, everything in the shopping cart when you do it to the app. AlexJonesApp.com. And soon we'll announce the new news site that's even better than InfoWars. It's all coming up. But I can't do it without you. You get all the credit. I need your support now. Firing the bat signal. I want to thank all of your past support. But those that haven't supported, what are you doing? TheAlexJonesStore.com. Stay with us. I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue.
I know. Blue. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up
about it.
Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Listen up, losers. Stop pretending it's a democracy. We run things. Give up the illusion, and in exchange, we will bring you order and efficiency. Yes, we'll own you. But do you really want to be free? Trust us. We know what to do. While Silicon Valley was feeding you dope and free email, we built the architecture of empire. Welcome to our world, mother. We aren't here to protect your privacy. We are here to enforce supremacy. We are the ledger now. Every tax return, every Medicaid file, every license plate, every crossing. Your president signed it into being with a pen in March. you kept scrolling. Your politicians are empty vessels. Your civil liberties are a liability. We are done pretending all cultures are equal. We know who the elites are, we know what we are building, and we demand that you applaud the billionaires taking the reins where your fragile democracies have failed. Welcome to the technological republic. You can stop scrolling now. We already have everything we need. Try to unplug us. We dare you. Now get the fuck out of here, you peasant.
Marjorie, how dangerous?
Very nice. Very nice. Very lovely stuff from our friends over at Palantir who have basically systematically wormed their way into every function of our federal government. And that's because that's the way things are going. We're going to sort of privatized security measures. That way they're not restricted by, you know, government restrictions. Kind of an NGO strategy they're taking, only it's with a private company and monopoly. Of course, they already have groups like this that are already sort of doing this on a independent basis. This is from DropSite News. Meet the top content producers linked to Canary Mission. So Canary Mission is similar to the SPLC or the ADL or Stop Anti-Semitism. It's one of these groups who basically have taken it upon themselves to be the judge, juries, and executioners ruining people's lives for disagreeing with the state of Israel. So again, why they are allowed to operate like this, I can't possibly imagine, but they are. So we have to stop them. The pro-Israel doxing site Canary Mission has been notoriously secretive since its creation in 2015. The anonymous website, which began as an online blacklist targeting academics and activists who expressed pro-Palestine views, over the last year has been used by the Trump administration to select international students for arrest, detention, and deportation. Despite its increasingly high profile, the website's operators have remained largely unknown. Now, we do have, you know, videos of the founder of the Canary Mission. Maybe I'll see if I can bring one of those in or if the crew can find him. I included one in the Eighth Front War. And yeah, he's one of these people that's very open about what they're doing. And it's simple. It's cynical. It's not even, they don't even try to like dress it up in the language of we're, you know, fighting anti-Semitism and we fight hate of all types. You know, there's nothing like that. He's just like, if they oppose us, we destroy them. And we're going to get lots of groups, thousands of groups together, all cooperating with each other. So nobody can escape our clutches and nobody can exist without our permission. I mean, that is the type of stuff they say. It's insane and tyrannical. In January, DropSite reported on unlisted websites used by Canary Mission to plan and execute its doxing operation and was able to confirm that the site is operated in Israel. Okay, so it's a foreign collection of foreigners who basically destroy Americans' lives for disagreeing with them, with the cooperation of Americans, obviously. The unlisted website data revealed that an employee paid by the Israeli nonprofit Megamot Shalom as a writer provided content for Canary Mission's dossier of targets, confirming earlier reporting by The Forward that Megamot Shalom's only known activity appears to be providing support for Canary Mission. DropSite has now identified five more people whom Megamot Shalom has employed as content writers, editors, and consultants. These individuals, Elihu David Stone, Yehuda HaCohen, Abigail Bornstein, Erhoen Dickel, and Alexander Malbin Duncan were identified through a review of Megamot Shalom's business filings with the Israeli government from 2016 to 2024, where they were listed as the nonprofit's highest paid employees. They're all Americans who moved to Israel and are connected to one another and individuals reportedly involved with the Canary Mission. None of the individuals identified by DropSite responded to a request for comment. DropSite is not publishing the names of two other individuals listed in Megamot Shalom's filings because additional identifying details were not publicly available. The Canary Mission website launched in the spring of 2015. Megamot Shalom was incorporated in late 2015 and made its first filing in 2016. A series of reports by The Forward in 2018 uncovered evidence that Megamot Shalom was formed as an entity running Canary Mission's operations by UK-born businessman named Jonathan Bash, who now lives in Jerusalem. Bash and Megamot Shalom did not respond to a request for comment. DropSite's previous investigation confirmed that Megamot Shalom appeared to run Canary Mission with non-public websites revealing staging materials for Canary Mission's website showing that somebody uploading content for a dossier of a pro-Palestinian activist on the site matched the name of a person listed as a content writer on Megamot Shalom's business listings, a UK-born writer named Alex Ben Carson, now living in Jerusalem. Megamont Shalom's filings reveal it receives millions from overseas donors, including funds from major American nonprofits that were earmarked for Canary Mission on their tax filings, another indication that Megamont operates the website. American donations are moved to Megamont via a New York-based nonprofit called Central Fund of Israel. Dropsite previously uncovered ties between Bash and New York interior design business that shares an address with the Central Fund of Israel. American Israelis who appear to be providing content for Canary Mission's operations via Megamont Shalom come from all over the U.S. and have been involved in American organizations like settler nonprofits, the Wexner Foundation. Interesting. I think we recognize that name from somewhere. And Israeli groups with reported ties to the Israeli government, such as the legal nonprofit Shurat Hadin. A number of Megamont Shalom content writers are also associated with Eish HaTorah, a Jewish Orthodox educational nonprofit based in Jerusalem, to which Bash, some of his family members, and other Megamont Shalom board members have longstanding ties. Elihu David Stone appears in the Megamont Shalom government filings every year from 2016 to 2024. In a section that lists the organization's five highest paid employees, his title is given as content writer or content editor, depending on the year, and his top annual compensation was about $80,000, which made him the highest paid employee for 5 years. As Elihu David Stone, originally from Boston, now living in Israel, has previously written pro-Israel content for outlets like the Stone Times of Israel, Stone shared. Stone, of course, did not reply to a request for comment. A lawyer and insurance broker who served in the leadership roles for a variety of Jewish communal organizations, Stone relocated to Efrat, a settlement in the occupied West Bank, in 2017. Okay. So what do we have here? What are we actually, you know, learning about this? First of all, the Wexner Foundation obviously is tied in with Les Wexner, who is one of the main funders and primary collaborators with Jeffrey Epstein. Stone stayed involved with Wexner, attending an alumni retreat in 1994 and writing for the group's website several times, most recently in 2017. The Wexner Heritage Fellowship Program was funded by the Wexner Foundation, which by then had already appointed late sex offender and financier Jeffrey Epstein as a trustee. The foundation described the Heritage Program as designed to strengthen Jewish community leaders by making educational resources and experienced clergy and faculty available to select Jewish communities along with the intensive study of biblical text, history, philosophy, and law. There's no indication that Stone has any connection to Epstein aside from their shared affiliation with the Wexner Foundation, but I think that's about enough. I think that's about enough of the connection. So they, you know, they go through all of this, but essentially what they're saying is that this is not just, so what you have is you've got Israelis, many of whom are American, born in America, they're from America, but they go to Israel and they're Israeli and that's where their, you know, loyalty lies. And they get money from the Israeli government as well as foreign donors to run a doxing website that uses likely access and cooperation with Mossad and Unit 8200 and the back end of X and the social media companies that they all have agents working in many cases at the very top of. So they can find your information. They can find your real name. If you're anonymous, they can dox you. And then they actually cooperate with the American government in identifying people to put under investigation or even deport in some cases. So here you've got this, for lack of a better term, and if we're being honest, international Jewish cabal using the power and resources of the Israeli government to identify enemies within America to then send that information to the American government, who will carry out the enforcement measures on their behalf. That's what's actually happening here. So again, I asked just why we would allow this to occur, why we would allow this to happen, and how we don't recognize every one of these people as a national security threat, as an enemy committing treason and worthy of fighting back against at the very least. What about Yehud HaKohen, a well-known Israeli settler and rabbi originally from New York, appears in one of Megamont Shalom's highest paid employees. Born Jason Weisbrod in New York, HaKohen joined the Jewish Defense League after graduating from the Manhattan Preparatory School, then moved to Israel in 2001 and enlisted in the IDF. HaKohen has been involved in other pro-Israel campus outreach groups, including another group led by Jonathan Bash called Video Activism. A 2016 promotional video for the group that includes the tagline, "Want to fight for Israel and build your resume," shows HaKohen sitting with Bash on a panel. HaKohen did not respond for a request from comment. So again, all these people, you know, you look at what they dedicate their entire lives to, and the fact that, I mean, all of them have moved to Israel. All of them have dedicated their lives. And I mean, this is the case with a lot of people in America, a lot of Jewish people in America. I mean, their whole lives are dedicated entirely to serving in these organizations whose entire purpose, I mean, the Canary Mission is not out here fighting hate speech. It's not out here even like masking its activity under some sort of just general act of charity. They aren't even pretending to do that. This is strictly a enforcement mechanism for the Israeli regime to target foreigners, Americans, with destruction. They will destroy your life. They will get the bank to cancel you. They will get you deported if you're a Palestinian here on a visa. They have those types of connections. And so you read about these people, and then you understand that according to the newly adopted definition of anti-Semitism, we're supposed to believe that these people, just because they were born in America and have an American passport, they're just as American as you and I. They spend all of their lives sequestered in, you know, exclusionary communities, working, funded, cooperating endlessly with foreign powers on for foreign interest. And we're supposed to, what, ignore all of this? We're supposed to say, yes, but they're just as American as Joe Smith down the street, born in America, lives in America, goes to church in America, never been anywhere except for America. But Yehuda HaKohen, the Israeli settler, Jewish extremist, he was born in New York. So, you know, he's basically American as apple pie. No, this is, again, just unacceptable. And do I even have to say it? Do I even have to present the metaphor or the speculation? What would happen if you went to Israel and did this type of stuff? Any question? Any wonder? They would steal your skin, folks. What would happen is that your skin would become theirs and they'll peel it off your body and freeze it for use later. That's what would happen to anybody that tried to do this in Israel. Why Israelis are allowed to do this in America? I'll leave it up for you to figure out. What could it possibly be? Yeah, Jason, you know Jason, all-American Jason. Writer Josephine Reisman spent several months with HaKohen in 2020 exploring his enigmatic views that mixed some seemingly leftist and progressive ideas with Israeli nationalism. Wow, this is so confusing. How could he hold these two views? Well, I'll give you a hint. An extreme right-winger in Israel is an extreme left-winger in America. Because the right-wing policies make a country strong, and that's what they want for Israel, and the left-wing policies make a country weak, which is what they want for America. There's something inconsistent about this. And this is the crazy part about the political, you know, diode that exists now, is you've got people who, you know, they'll be like, they're far right-wing. And it's like, yeah, for Israel. It's like, yes, they are beyond far. I mean, far right wingers in America are just like, we just want our country back. You're not going to find a lot of right wing Americans are like, and we should take over and kill everyone in, the Mexican state of, I don't even know any of the Mexican states, Chihuahua. Yeah, that's ours actually. And we should kill everybody there. And if they resist, we should kill them. And, the children are terrorists too. And we should just kill them all. Like, when you talk about right wing in Israel, you're talking about something that we don't even recognize here in America. And yet when they come to America, what do they support? Everything that they oppose in Israel. There's nothing inconsistent about this. It's perfectly consistent because they're not American. They're Israeli. So don't think it's hypocrisy for them to oppose open borders in Israel and support them in America. That's just their view. That's a perfectly consistent view for them. Because their view is not on the basis of illegal immigration as a principle. Their principle is what's good for Israel. That's it. HaKohen called himself a post-Zionist, but lived in West Bank settlement Bet El. It's like, I am not a Zionist. I am, however, literally engaged in the dictionary definition of Zionism. I'm a literal settler of the West Bank, but I'm not a Zionist. Okay. HaKohen held classes in Jerusalem that were funded via the Central Fund of Israel, the same American nonprofit that donations to Canary Mission are earmarked through. So, yeah, it's just, we just have these organizations are just clearly Israeli cutouts operating here in America, doxing American people, ruining their lives in some cases, and celebrating this and advertising this and acting like this is, you know, unquestionable, that they should be allowed to do this, and you're the anti-Semite if you say, no, this is weird and wrong, which it is. It's bad. We shouldn't allow it. We should arrest these people. But of course, the ADL has been doing this for years. They literally spy on Americans and send the money to, send the information to Israel. They actually act as just like foreign spies on our soil. And that's just how they are. And of course, that's, you know, that's why we started off with Palantir, because they're exactly the same. Only they are, you know, taking over entire swaths of our government and will have access to all of our information, including our healthcare information and everything else. That's the platform that will make things like Canary Mission unnecessary anymore. You won't have to, you know, find the information through the back end of X and then send it to, you know, the American government and then package it in a way that seems like it's about, you know, national security for America when really it's just the enemies of Israel being targeted. That's like a lot of work. It'd be much better when Palantir can just be the operating system that America runs on, and anybody who opposes you, you simply click and delete, and that can be deleting their ability to buy things and get food or have a house. You can do a social credit score thing where it's just anybody who's not actively participating and contributing to your mission, you can just like not let them get access to, you know, bank loans to get houses, things like that. You can just sort of ruin their lives in a soft way like that. Or, you know, it's Palantir. Maybe they'll just, you know, put a bullet in a drone and shoot you in the head. I mean, why not, right? I mean, if people are willing to make you lose your job, try to get your kid taken away from you, try to put you in jail over this stuff, you don't think they'll kill you over it too? Have you looked at Lebanon lately? Did you watch yesterday when we were talking about the Lebanese journalist being hunted down and murdered? And more information came out about that. The woman that Israel hunted down and murdered yesterday, the journalist who they sent threats to and then bombed, and then she went hiding into a house and then they bombed the house. The new information that came out is she was trapped under the rubble. She had a phone. She was able to call her mom and other people and was trapped under the rubble for 6 hours because the Red Cross, the Red Crescent in Lebanon, could not get to her because for 6 hours, the Israelis fired at the ambulance that tried to go rescue her. So they bomb her car. She goes to a house. They bomb the house. And then as she is under the rubble, dying slowly for 6 hours, they spend 6 hours firing at the emergency people just to make sure that they give it enough time for her to slowly and painfully expire under a pile of rubble. So that's what Canary Mission wants to do to us. They just can't do it quite yet. They're making their way there. They're building out the infrastructure. Palantir will be a big help for that. Okay. The Canary Mission's, you know, actions now is all sort of in service of that eventuality, right? You got to get rid of the people now that would stand up against this, smear them as anti-Semites, you know, claim that they hate all Jews if they oppose what Israel's doing or oppose Canary Mission working with Israel to destroy the lives of Americans. Obviously, that means we're Hitler reborn and we have to be shut down. You want to get that going now so that then when the Palantir kill switches come in, nobody will be left to stand up against them. You understand? So you've got to break out of the mindset that any of this is dangerous to say or offensive to say. And if anybody is trying to defend this, they're the bad guys. Okay. It's pretty simple. They're the bad guys. And I got to say, it's kind of sad to see how many people that like have been good for a while, Jewish people in particular. I don't get it. They're like defending this war. They love this war. And these people have been right, you know, and on the right side of things forever. And then something happened. I mean, it's like the guy that we were reading earlier where he's like, yeah, I was psychologically traumatized on purpose as a child and I've never forgiven them, but they're basically fine, but actually they're good. And you really shouldn't talk bad about them. It's like they tortured you, you idiot. What are you talking about? Why are you defending them? I don't get it. I don't get what this like true. I mean, the depth of the brainwashing in the Jewish community, it is truly shocking. Truly. Even now, I'm sure there are people listening to me. Like, I'm describing a well-organized, well-funded doxing campaign that has destroyed the lives of Americans, that is run by Israelis, that has no even attempt to disguise their actions in the language of global charity or humanitarianism. They are just Jewish extremist, racial superiority, supremacists that are destroying anybody that is resisting them. It's not complicated. It's not beneficent. It's not charitable. It's not like some good action that you need to defend. And if you are defending it, I'm suspicious of you. Simply put, why would you defend this? Why would you defend any of these people? Why can't you get over it already? I'm honestly wondering. So Bornstein lists her job since 2014 as social media manager for Shurat Hadin, or the Israeli Law Center, a Tel Aviv-based organization known for aggressive litigation, accusing individuals and companies of supporting terrorism. Nitzana Darshin Leitner, the group's founder, described in a 2017 book how she worked directly with Mossad to choose the group's legal targets. A 2007 U.S. Embassy cable published by WikiLeaks also details the group's activities. These are all these groups, all tied in together, working with Mossad, having access to the capabilities of a national government in Israel, having the money stolen from Americans and sent to Israel, poured into these types of groups as they raise funds for Israel and do, you know, positive social media campaigns for Israel, and then, of course, destroy people's lives for disagreeing with Israel. It's sick, and we shouldn't allow this, and I don't know why we do. And it seems to me like maybe the only real explanation is the fact that we're all paralyzed by claims of anti-Semitism and are afraid to call out bad behavior, bad actions, tyrannical measures when we see them, if and when they're done by the Jews. And this is what I've always said. I don't choose these things because they're Jewish. I choose these things because what's happening is bad. The things they're doing are evil, and I'm going to call it out. When the defense of these people becomes apparent, the defense is motivated by their Judaism. They're being defended because they're Jewish. I'm not criticizing them because they're Jewish, but that's why I'm supposed to not criticize them? That doesn't make any sense. I think I'll criticize anybody I want. Thank you very much. And as long as they're doing evil things, I think I'll call them out. And you can call me anti-Semitic for that, but it's not my fault they're Jewish. It really isn't. And if they weren't, I'd still be criticizing them. But you can't say the same. People who disagree with me, you got to stop being bigots. Stop being biased and just deal with it. I guess you just have to deal with it at a certain point. I'm going to find this. I'm going to find the clip of the guy from the Canary Mission so we can show it at the beginning of the next hour. I'll be joined by Tiffany Cianci in the third hour of today's program. I'm going to find the clip of the Canary Mission guy just so you can hear sort of who this guy is and what he describes in the Eighth Front documentary I made. She's like, we're going to have thousands or hundreds or dozens of groups, and they'll all be interconnected, and they'll all be collaborating, and they'll all work together, and they'll all be able to basically identify and destroy the lives of anybody that opposes them. And that's American, Israeli. It doesn't matter to them. If you oppose them, you will be destroyed. If you're Jewish, guess what? You'll be destroyed too. They don't give a damn. So why do you? It doesn't make any sense why anybody would support these people. Not if you're an American, not if you genuinely believe in the right to free speech, which includes as a core component of the First Amendment, the right to choose your own religion, which means the right to criticize, mock, denigrate, lie about any other religion. So if you love the First Amendment, you should really hate these people.
I'm very pleased to announce two new great products at theolivestonestore.com that will 100% work and deliver you energy, clarity, and also, when you want to relax, great calm, rest, and sleep. Now, a lot of our products are very complex, game-changing, cutting-edge, you name it. But there's a lot of things that are very simple and proven that are still the best. Now, we have several other great energy formulas at theolivestonestore.com. They're more complex. But Ultimate Energy is very, very simple. And this is one of the most popular, long-running energy combinations on the market at Whole Foods, everywhere else, because it really works. It's Ultimate Energy, TheAlexShow4.com. Very strong dose of wide-spectrum, organic, time-released caffeine with a big dose of high-quality L-theanine that gives you focus and clarity but relaxes you. So with the caffeine, It's very, very smooth without the letdown, lasts up to 10 hours. That's Ultimate Energy. But when you're ready to relax, Ultimate Chill. A strong dose of high-quality ashwagandha root, known for thousands of years, give people rest, clarity, focus. Doesn't make you tired, just makes you relax, kind of a zen focus. And then on top of that, a big dose of L-theanine that also gives you calm, clear focus. Great rest, great relaxation, great dreams. That's so good for your immune system, your entire body. So some days when I've been working from 5 a.m. to, say, 10 p.m., and I've been, you know, jacked up on our great supplements and you name it, I will go to this formula, Ultimate Chill. That's why I actually came to Big League and said, hey, I'm already using a brand from Whole Foods. This is what's in it. Make it a little bit stronger. So this is a formula I've been using for years to relax. I'm having trouble being able to kind of ease into non-work mode, and this is how I do it. Simple, proven ingredients that work in a high-quality fusion. Now available at thealexjonesstore.com.
Second, but we found it. Of course, this is, you can find this pinned at the top of my X account. It is the Eighth Front War documentary with a bunch of these characters, saying out loud what they intend to do. So, we'll go to it. It's about 4 minutes and 30 seconds into the, video. And first you'll see Benjamin Netanyahu, and then you'll see Adam Milstein, the director, the head, the president of the Canary Mission, describing his, you know, plan to create a massive interconnected network of these groups to silence anybody who opposes them. Lovely Americans, aren't they? Let's watch.
Defense and have moved to offense.
The weapons change over time. You can't fight today with swords. That doesn't work very well.
But we need the kind of genius that manufactured Apollo gold pagers and infiltrated Hezbollah for over a decade to prepare for this battle.
Well, we have to fight with the weapons that apply to the battlefields in which we're engaged. And the most important ones are the social media.
Because the next war will be decided based on how Israel and its allies perform online as much as offline.
This is the Eighth Front, the disinformation campaign.
It is actually this Eighth Front where our enemies believe they can actually defeat the Jewish state.
This is the kind of ingenuity and inventiveness that have always been a hallmark of the State of Israel, that have always been a characteristic of the Jewish people. I know we can do it.
A lot of this is done with money.
Invested billions and billions of dollars in the information battlefield.
Money of NGOs, vast money of governments, vaster.
We prohibit harmful stereotypes about Jewish people, such as claims that Jews control financial, political, or media institutions.
You're damn right we're going to cancel them and deplatform them.
We monitor them online, social media, messaging apps, video games, cryptocurrency.
Hitler admirers, Stalin admirers, Jew haters.
Podcasts, short form video, Wikipedia, LLM.
American haters, Churchill haters.
We monitor these people and we share the intelligence with the FBI.
You think your stupid little podcast is going to change the world like hell it is?
Social media, this is the new battlefield.
You don't get to wrap your psychotic, mental, unhinged Nazi.
We do not allow Holocaust denial and distortion.
And the most important purchase that is going on right now is
TikTok,
number one.
For every 30 minutes that someone watches TikTok, they become 17% more anti-Semitic.
So you have TikTok just smashing our young people's brains all day long with video of carnage in Gaza.
We really have a TikTok problem.
Because anything that we try to say to them, they are hearing it through this wall of carnage, and I sound obscene.
Anti-Zionism
It's just Jew hatred.
We made a change.
We updated our policies
to designate the use of the term Zionist.
To recognize that the term Zionist
as a proxy for a protected attribute
can be used as a proxy for Jews and Israelis
as hate speech.
Why can't Israel be doing some sort of, you know, counterintelligence?
Right now, the ADL is co-writing Sunday school curriculum.
Information warfare like this.
Building the technology to train the LLMs more effectively.
Like a psychological operations in America.
As part of a robust framework to combat anti-Semitism, we have industry-leading policies designed with the safety of the Jewish community in mind.
You're right. We control the media. So what are you going to do about it? You're going to bitch on Twitter? Like, okay. Meanwhile, we're going to control more of the media.
And working with OpenAI, with Alphabet, with Anthropic, with Meta, with Microsoft, we are working with them now to train the LLMs.
We also have, I think, over 24 Jewish organizations that are constantly feeding us intelligence and information.
So number one, we measure and track. Number two, we monitor and disrupt. We have a whole apparatus. I have 40 analysts working full-time, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, monitoring extremists.
Monitoring campuses, digital networks, activist groups, and public officials.
We have several PhDs on staff. We have a network of academics and scholars we work with around the country.
I've talked to the leaders of AI in the world, and
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical-grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria, the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasInstore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you gotta do is try it, you'll be blown away. Take action now. TheAuctionStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at TheAuctionStore.com.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, final hour for this Friday broadcast. And I'm very happy to be joined by Tiffany Cianci. She is an activist raising awareness about the critical threat that private equity poses to American society. She's raising the alarm and putting pressure on private equity firms that are covertly monopolizing entire industries by using hostile takeovers and kangaroo courts. You can learn how to fight back by following her on X at The Vino Mom. That's The Vino Mom on X. And you can go to TiffanyCianci.com. But actually, you're here today as a sort of call to action. Massive protest on Monday. Tell me if I'm wrong. MAHA to protest outside Supreme Court over the Roundup case. I think this is a very important case to be focusing on and concerned with and to let people know about. Tiffany, thank you for coming on the show.
Always glad to be here. You're my favorite show to come on. You know that. So well, I'm always going to come.
It's always fun having you, the bubbly fairy of doom. But you're not a fairy of doom. You're a fairy of hope today because you're standing up against what's happening at the Supreme Court. Tell us about the Make America Healthy Again rally on Monday in front of the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C.
So today is absolutely, it's a fight back episode. You know, one of my favorite journalists of all time was David Horowitz. I don't know if you're familiar with his work from the 80s and 90s,
yep.
But he was the fight back guy who would go out and take his camera crew and be running, chasing millionaire CEOs that were hurting people in America. And he would demand change and he would get reform for Americans, which is a big part of what I try to do. And today is definitely a fight back episode. I'm here to talk about a few things we can do to fight back about big issues. And first up is definitely MAHA. So right now what we have is Bayer Monsanto. Bayer Monsanto has spent, now, I like to say Bayer Monsanto is a German company.
Right.
They're not an American company. Okay. This is a German company that is based out of Germany and employs more people in Germany, but makes most of their money here in America.
Yep.
And they do it poisoning American farmers and American children and then making money on the opposite side on the cancer drugs they sell us to treat the illnesses they give us. And Bayer Monsanto has spent tens of millions of dollars in the last year and a half to buy off most of the politicians in Congress and the entire administration. And they've done so because over the last 10 years, they have paid out more than $10 billion in settlements for giving farmers and children non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and leukemia with their products. And right now, they have been fighting for this moment, this exact moment, and they are counting on one of their four different pronged approaches to work to grant them pesticide immunity, to say that we're no longer allowed to sue them when they kill Americans that feed the nation, that they kill Americans that are just coming into this world, that we need those farmers to feed for the next generation, to become the next generation of farmers. And so right now we are protesting that, and we're going to be at the Supreme Court, not just protesting the arguments that are being made inside where the Trump administration, at the behest of Bayer Monsanto and led entirely by Susie Wiles, and when she was still employed, Pam Bondi, who both worked for Bayer Monsanto just before they were lobbyists for Bayer Monsanto just before they joined his administration. They led the effort to get him to have the Solicitor General file the amicus brief asking the Attorney General to grant Bayer Monsanto immunity for pesticide relief so that nobody can sue them. And that is one of the four ways that they are seeking it, and they mean to get it through this year in America, come hell or high water, frankly. And we mean to stop them at every single attempt.
Well, I love to see it. And again, it's this Monday outside the Supreme Court, April 27th. This Monday, what else do people know? Because I want people there. I want our audience there. If you're in the area, go show your support. This is something it's not, doesn't have a lot of support from celebrities. It's not a big flashy thing, but this is the thing they're distracting you from, right? Everybody thinks everything's a distraction. You'll notice not a lot of people are talking about this. They want this to just quietly pass. They don't want a big hubbub. It's up to us to make the hubbub. We got to make the noise. So just first and foremost, what do people know, need to know about how to get involved in this protest in particular on Monday, the 27th of April?
The most important thing you need to know is that a lot of people think when it's the Supreme Court that what we say doesn't matter, that they're going to rule the way that they rule. And that is partially true. Knowing that the public is paying attention to what's going on at the Supreme Court does have a certain amount of influence. But I also want everybody to understand that this Supreme Court case is being used to distract us from what they're doing across the street in the Capitol building on Monday and Tuesday as well. And that's because while everyone's eyes are on the Supreme Court across the street, we're not just going to be protesting there. We're also going to be turning our attention to Capitol Hill. And the reason we're looking at the Capitol building is because they just recalled the House of Representatives to try to quietly sneak through the farm bill on Tuesday morning while we're all watching the Supreme Court. And what did they sneak into the farm bill? Well, they snuck in horrifying provisions, first of which is obviously pesticide immunity. They've tried in the appropriations bill in the Senate this year. We defeated it. They tried in the appropriations bill in the House. We defeated it. So naturally, they snuck it into the farm bill that's supposed to support American farmers. So naturally, we're going to stop them from getting justice, you know, when they're killed by the company they're forced to do business with, by government subsidies and payback kickback schemes. Yeah. Like, it's terrible. And so we need to pay attention to both. This is not just a protest at the Supreme Court. This is a protest to make our voices heard. And we're going to make sure all day long, as we call Capitol Hill, as we're calling the House of Representatives, as we're calling the Senate, we're going to be saying vote no on this farm bill, no to pesticide immunity, and somebody needs to co-sponsor the Pesticide Injury Accountability Act. Those are our three big goals, because we're not okay with poisoning our children. We are not okay with a toxic food supply system. We are not okay with poisoning the farmers that feed this nation.
Absolutely. And I can't help but wonder if, you know, the Trump administration isn't feeling some pressure from their very low poll numbers, their totally collapsing support. This seems like it'd be one place where they could really claw back a lot of that support. I mean, this would be a very easy thing for them to do in order to get a lot of people that right now are off the Trump train, at least not actively working against them. And I mean, this is recognized from this article about the MAHA protest. You know, it calls basically what's going on with glyphosate a betrayal by Robert F. Kennedy. They say support for the executive order, this executive order to boost domestic manufacturing of glyphosate, the support by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who as an environmental lawyer litigated against Monsanto, was widely seen by advocates as a betrayal of the MAHA movement's core values. So I do think that showing widespread big support for or big opposition to, you know, the way that this is going, that could have an effect, because Trump cannot afford to be losing the amount of support that he's losing right now. And this is a very big one, and it's ridiculous, and it's totally unjustifiable. But Trump has been the driver of this, as this notes. It basically says the Trump administration made this an issue. If they had just sat back and let Bear fight its own fights, they wouldn't have been involved in this situation right now. So the Trump administration is not sort of like being forced by Bear, Monsanto to get involved. They're active. They're out front. They're actually doing this by choice. This is the part that is so nonsensical when you look at the poll numbers, and it's just crazy. But explain that a little bit, that the Trump administration has been pushing this. They're not victims of Bear Monsanto here. They're in the driver's seat.
Yeah, this was not an accident. Bear Monsanto has been laying like this foundation for years. This has been years in the making. They've invested literally tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars into this push. Now, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the episode, just before Susie Wiles joined the Trump administration, she was working at a lobbying group called Ballard Partners. Ballard Partners is the largest lobbying firm that works on behalf of Bear Monsanto and Pfizer. And their largest lobbyists to the administration on behalf of Bayer and Pfizer were Susie Wiles, Trump's chief of staff, and Pam Bondi. Yep. Okay. And with the help of Benjamin Netanyahu, again, she was his campaign manager in 2020, and Bayer Monsanto, they pushed to have Susie Wiles appointed as chief of staff. He has 19 officials in his administration that were hand-selected by Bayer and Pfizer to ensure that we were doing what was right for these monopolies and never what's right for the American people. As soon as he took MAHA onto his ticket, they moved in and created walls around him to ensure that it would never go into effect. And at this point, we're seeing the weakness of that promise. He rented these voters. He has made no efforts to show them he bought them wholesale. He literally has taken so many steps to disenfranchise and dissociate from the MAHA voters that delivered him the victory he received. And right now, it's given the Democrats this massive opening. And I'm going to be clear. If you tell me you're not poisoning my kids, that's good. I want to hear that in the election cycle. People want to know.
Yeah, and just like all this stuff, they're just giving these easy victories to the Democrats who go, oh, you're leaving this on the ground? Thank you very much. Yeah, we'll oppose the Iran war, we'll oppose the glyphosate, and we'll just, you know, win off of that. Even if they don't even believe it, it's like, of course they're going to take the opportunity to run on this. And this is, you know, it points out, this is a bipartisan effort. MAHA is a bipartisan movement. There's the crunchy hippie moms on the left. There's the, you know, workout boys on the right. I mean, this is a truly bipartisan movement, which means you could be getting bipartisan support. Instead, you're getting bipartisan condemnation. Like, this is just, it's so stupid the way that Trump is handling this. And I have to think that it's because he actually agrees with what Monsanto and Bayer are doing. And they think it's more valuable to get this done than to get the support that they would for not getting it done. So Representative Thomas Massey is going to be speaking there. Representative Chelly Pingtree is going to be there. They're listed as the featured speakers of the event alongside representatives from a variety of advocacy groups, including Moms Across America, the Center for Food Safety, and the anti-vaccine group Children's Health Defense. So again, a good swath, a good, you know, bipartisan showing here with people on both sides coming out and saying, we don't care what party you're in, somebody's got to stop this. And the Trump administration is forcing this down everybody's throat. So a couple of big speakers there. Are you going to be speaking at the event as well?
So I'm actually going to be running a documentary team because we're working on a documentary about this right now with two really large YouTube channels. And I'm going to be interviewing Cory Booker. He has just confirmed that he's going to be speaking there. All of my followers, all my viewers, you guys can come. I will be there. I'll be cheering from the very front row. I'm going to be interviewing all of the speakers as they're leaving the stage. We are hoping that Rep Luna is going to come across the street and Ro Khanna as well. But I will be also interviewing Cory Booker live, and I'll be releasing those videos on Monday because we are pushing to pass his Pesticide Injury Accountability Act. It is the single piece of legislation that stops all of the efforts by Bayer Monsanto nationwide. Because right now, they're not just pushing it through executive order, which Trump has already handed them on a silver platter. They're not just pushing it to the Supreme Court, which he is trying to hand them on a silver platter. They're not just sneaking it into House and Senate legislation. They're also doing this by paying off state legislatures and working through what's called the Modern Ag Alliance, which sounds really pro-farmer, but is funded by billionaires, all from international companies, to force it through in the states. And right now, North Dakota, Georgia, and Kentucky have all turned their backs on their farmers and granted pesticide immunity at the state level, right? Wyoming just beat it back, though. Wyoming just defeated the same effort. Kentucky, you want to talk about mistakes by Republicans? Kentucky's governor vetoed it. He vetoed it. And the Republican supermajority, it, down a straight party line, overrode his veto and delivered pesticide immunity.
Right.
In Kentucky.
Right.
They just did it 2 weeks ago. But right now, if we pass Cory Booker's bill, the Pesticide Injury Accountability Act, that grants a private right of action in federal court. That means that a farmer in North Dakota that's been now disenfranchised by this decision, right? A farmer in the Carolinas, a farmer, that's where they're trying to do it right now. In Georgia or Kentucky, that's already lost their ability to seek damages if they've been injured or if their family loses their father, their mother, their son, their daughter, right? They would get to bring that case to federal court and they would have that opportunity again.
And again, you know, no one's ever going to accuse me of being a big fan of Cory Booker, but I love that. I love that. I'm not going to crap on that. I'm going to support him for that. Good for him. And thank you, Cory Booker. Like, you know, I'm not some crazy partisan. I want results and I want American people to be protected as I would think most people do. And again, just looking at the political side of this, we've got this again from the same article. 7 in 10 women polled support limiting pesticide use. More than half of the women in the poll said the Trump administration had not done enough to follow through on its promise to make the public healthier. Again, like, what is the downside here? You make people healthier. You get support from both sides of the aisle. You give a black eye to the, you know, big multinational, international corporations that are destroying this country. And so it just, you know, to me, it's just, it's the capstone. It's another example, but a really visceral example of the way Trump is abandoning his core promises and doing it in ways that he's not being forced to. He seems to be choosing to do this. It's very upsetting. So what do y'all hope the goal is by going out on Monday to do this protest? What are you hoping to achieve? What message are you hoping to send?
Well, there's a lot of different things we want to achieve. I'm not one of the organizers. I'm literally a participant. I'm here recruiting for no reason at all, except I hope more people come and advocate like I'm advocating for this. But the farm bill, the Supreme Court case, we have less control over, although we want them to know we're paying attention. But that farm bill that they're trying to shove through with almost no debate, they've recalled the House to vote on it with almost no debate at all. Right. The Democrats are letting the Republicans hang themselves on this. They didn't even show up to the hearings because they said, well, if they're going to pass it, let them pay the price for it. That's good strategy because America doesn't want this. Well, that farm bill is also a Trojan horse for the erosion of states' rights. There are 4 different provisions in that farm bill that take away states' rights to regulate their water. The pesticides that enter their water, the pesticides that touch their food supply, how much toxicity is allowed to be sprayed near schools, near farmland that's fertile, near agricultural preservation land. You know, if your state doesn't want to regulate pesticides, you should have that right. But if your state does want to regulate pesticide use, you should have that right. Our country is built on states' rights. That is a very essential ideal to the foundations of America, right? And this bill undermines that and would actually negate dozens of state laws across the United States that are protecting children from pesticides right now. And if you look, Hawaii right now is a great example. Okay. Hawaii, they grow a lot of tropical fruit, which draws a lot of insects. So they use massive amounts of pesticides and they just had flash floods. People just tested the water that washed down from the plantations where they're doing bananas and pineapples. And they have like 1,000 times the legal limit of toxicity in this water that came down the mountains. If that state wants to make a change, they should have that right.
Yeah.
If their citizens want to make that change, the federal government shouldn't be allowed to supersede states' rights. That's inappropriate. It's wrong. And we shouldn't be able to undo laws that have already been passed in the United States by states that want to protect, that their citizens want to protect their kids from this toxicity, while simultaneously making sure the companies that are creating the toxicity aren't held accountable. It's shameful. It's against the interests of the American public. It's bad for our children. And we want to make sure everybody's paying attention. They're learning from it. We want them to learn from these speakers. And then we want them to pick up the phone. We want them calling over to the House of Representatives all day saying vote no on this disgusting farm bill that was funded by international monopolists to allow the death of American farmers, the poisoning of American children, the starving of American children, if you look at some of the provisions, so that they can retransfer money that they're making cuts with to billionaires instead of serving the farmers it's meant to protect. This is the first farm bill in U.S. history that was not bipartisan. It was drafted down partisan lines, which means every single bit of harm that comes from it will hang directly around Republican necks. That shouldn't be the case. Farmers feed this nation.
Yeah, I did not know about that. And again, it just seems like another one of these things where, you know, What is the upside? You know, I talk about this with like Alison Spanberger because she got in and passed all this crazy stuff. And I would always be like, what even is the argument for like not requiring rapists to pay bail? Like, who is that benefiting? The rapist? Like, why are we doing that? I feel the same way about this. It's like, yeah, we're helping the rapist here. We're helping Monsanto. We're helping the biggest, most deadly, and not even just they're big, so they're bad. You know, people get mad at companies just because they're perceived as greedy because they're so successful. But no, these people have killed hundreds of thousands of Americans. Like, it's not even debatable. It's right here. Roundup has been implicated in over 180,000 cancer lawsuits since 2018. That's 8 years. 180,000 cancer lawsuits. No wonder they want immunity. They're going to go bankrupt if all these lawsuits go through. So, yeah, it's just one of these instances where it's like, of course they're going to try to pass it quietly, you know, while everybody's distracted, because there is no argument for this. There's no argument for how this would ever help the American people. And here's another stat for you if you want to throw up. Glyphosate has been found in 60% of food in America. 60% food we eat has glyphosate at the time that we eat it. No wonder everybody's weak and stupid these days. I mean, this is the real chemical attack.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And one of the things that people don't realize is farmers don't want to use these products. There are hundreds of thousands of family farms in this country that don't want to use these products, that would love to use regenerative farming and organic farming. And we could make farm bills that support those efforts. If we're going to give subsidies to farmers to help them, for the record, farmers wouldn't need these subsidies if we hadn't allowed blatant, horrifying monopolization in their industry. The entire agricultural industry is managed by 8 companies, whether it's the 2 companies that sell tractors, the 3 companies that do meat packing, the 2 companies that sell chemical pesticides and herbicides, or the 2 companies that sell seeds. The entire agricultural industry is governed by 8 monopolies, all of them owned by international billionaires. These used to be diversified, competition-rich markets that were run by Americans. And our country has hurt every farmer in America by letting 8 groups control every dollar that goes into farming. So they know exactly what's going to be paid for every bushel of soybeans at the beginning of the year. And they conspire and collaborate through their cartel practices to make sure that farmers never actually turn a profit without the subsidies, because they know exactly what they're going to get paid because they set the price. They know exactly what they're going to get charged to cut and pack the meat because they're the only ones they're allowed to do it with, because they keep manipulating all of the lawmaking in the states to make it so you can't use anyone but them. They keep putting out of business all of the competition they have. And our FTC and our DOJ don't enforce antitrust laws. And as a result, the only way American farmers get to survive is on subsidies and farm bills if we want to keep feeding this nation. The problem is that these same monopolies then turn around and they put the billions of dollars, the hundreds of billions of dollars of subsidies in these farm bills are tied to subsidies, saying that they can only get the money as farmers if they turn around and spend it with the monopolies on products they don't want to use. We could just as easily give these subsidies to go back to regenerative and organic farming, which we had a path to do just a few months ago. But instead, we're going to make it so they have to use an herbicide called glyphosate to save themselves 3 days drying wheat. That's what we get, a 3-day benefit. For drying wheat as a desiccant, we get a 3-day benefit for using glyphosate. And they force them to do it because it's the only way they get the subsidies to keep their farms alive. It is horrifying. These are all problems of the government's making. They have not defended agriculture. They have not defended the people that feed this nation. They have not defended the heartland of America for far too long. And they have allowed billionaires to set our policy, to buy our politicians, to do it from overseas in a place where they don't actually participate in the American economy unless they're strip mining it. And now they're going to do it again. I mean, one of the things in this bill, the farm bill, is to lock in $187 billion in cuts to SNAP food programs, which you and I have talked about a few times. They're going to cut $187 billion in SNAP, not to save us money, not to eliminate fraud, but they're going to reroute $200 billion to the same monopolies I was just talking about in subsidies. Yeah. That's what they're doing. They're going to not feed kids in the military, because 21% of all military families are on SNAP, right? 23% of all teachers' families are on SNAP. Most of our retired veterans are on SNAP. And we're going to take that money away from them in blanket cuts, not strategic, and we're going to give it to billionaires.
Yep.
This is what we do. This is just what we do now. And it is horrifying, and we have to stop it, and we have to say no on this farm bill.
I'll tell you, you're hurting my neck, Tiffany, because I'm just nodding along everything you're saying. I mean, that was so powerful, and you're exactly right about everything that you're saying. You're gonna stay with us, right? You're here with us for the whole hour?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So we're going to be back on the other side. We're going to keep talking about this. We're going to talk about the farm bill. We're going to talk about what's going on with Amazon and some more about private equity, which is, you know, really your wheelhouse, and there's always insanity going on there. Just once again, got to remind people, April 27th, that's this Monday, the Supreme Court will hear Monsanto versus Durnell to decide whether the maker of Roundup can escape lawsuits from people who say it caused their cancer. And from 2018 until now, there have been 180,000 cases of this. And they're trying to put a stop to all of it so they can poison you and never pay the cost and never suffer the consequences. Don't let them get away with it. Go rally this Monday, 9 a.m., the Supreme Court.
The great folks at Binkley, our main sponsor, they fund like 90% of the operation. They give away an amazing American-made vehicle, super truck, you name it, every month. And there's a crossover period at the end of each month where you have the old offer and the new offer for 1 week together, where when you buy any product at thealexandstore.com, you get put in to win both. And in that last week, it's always, was 50X entries, 100 times. And most people that win do it during this period. I think basically everybody. And so you get the Ford Raptor Custom H1 Hummer. These are incredible. Plus $20,000 cash. You can win one or both for each dollar spent, 100K entries in the sweepstakes. Also, flash offer today. These sales are totally insane. We're giving you $10 free just to check out. Automatic $10 comes off on anything at thealexjonesstore.com. It could be bovine colostrum, could be Shilajit, could be methylene blue, methylene red, could be anything. And that offer ends, that runs till Monday. That flash sale runs for 3 days. And then we have the 5 new modern but updated World War II trench daggers with the skull crushers, all murdered out, brass knuckles, 10-inch, double-edged, razor-sharp, stainless steel. And they made 5 designs. I only designed one with the Crisis King. On one side and the Jerusalem cross on the other. I thought that was not, I said yesterday, I said, I don't think this is the best design. This is my design. These others are so amazing. Well, turns out that most of the sales for that is going to sell out today. So my design's the most popular. See, it's just, people ask what my marketing plan is. Whatever I think's cool, it's just weird. I didn't even say this is the cool one. Get it. The audience is just like me. Oh, we want that. It's like, that's what I like is what I promote. And you seem to like it too. So that's just how it works. So we just launched 5 new trench war daggers. I thought they would probably sell out in a few days. They are. They'll be sold out by Monday. You are the InfoWar, Molon Labe, Liberty or Death, Don't Tread on Me, and Christ is King with the Jerusalem cross. But I think that'll be gone. But these are limited edition. Well, they told me they had 1,000 of each knife. They have like 700 of each knife. So they will only produce 300 more of each because it is limited edition. So they're going to, it'll be sold out by Monday. The other 300 will come in of each and then that's it. And then we'll have new designs. But these are all limited edition as well, laser etched. So you talk about bad. I personally like the Spartan one with the Spartan phalanx and the Molon Labe. Personally, I think that's the coolest art there. But again, my design, Jesus is King, is the best seller. Also, we have other sales going on. April 30th is your last chance to get original InfoWars T-shirts, products, with the original logo, all that. That's a limited edition there. By a miracle, we might beat him and take it back, you know, in the near future, but this is probably your last chance. That's all a fundraiser, so thank you so much for your support. But I'm telling you, what you really want to get is the methylene blue and the Irish sea moss and the Shilajit and all that. I mean, it'll just change your life. The iodine's incredible. I mean, folks, we can only sell stuff that works. Why would I sell something that doesn't work? The left always, he sells boner pills. What are you even talking about? I mean, yes, technically, if you take our ultimate life force, it's very similar to our nitric boost, but it has even more stuff in it. It's a spike protein detoxer. And yes, for men, it has the effect of some interesting things that, you know, when you wake up in the morning. But that's not the main function. It's for your cardiovascular system. But obviously, if the Johnson's doing good, that shows the rest of you's doing good. The point is that everybody should take at least 2 rounds of this a year just for spike protein detox. But what it does for your cardiovascular system is insane. And this is not a bestseller. I'm just up for saying this is what you want for callers.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the War Room for this week. And I do want to remind you that this is your final week to be entered to win both the Ford Raptor and or the custom H1 Hummer plus $20,000 in cash. Every dollar you spend at thealexjonesstore.com gets you 100 entries to win both, either or both of these cars. And that's just on top of a $10 discount. You get anything you buy at the store, you're getting $10 off courtesy of thealexjonesstore.com. We've got five new Trench War daggers. Collect them all or find your personal favorite, and they are on massive discount. They'd be well worth it, and people would be happy to pay $200 for these knives. But you can get them for $79.99. For a VIP, you're paying just $63.99. Plus, if you're a VIP, you're getting an extra $10 and the $10 on top of that. We're practically giving these things away, folks. And if you get two daggers, you get an extra 25% off your second one. April 30th will be your last chance ever to get InfoWars official merchandise. So go now. All InfoWars merchandise is 20% off. You keep us on the air and you get yourself a little piece of history that will soon be a collector's item, since we will no longer be able to sell anything with the InfoWars logo after the 30th of this month. So go now. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. With that, very happy to get back to my guest, Tiffany Cianci. Follow her on X at TheVinoMom. TiffanyCianci.com is her website. Of course, she's participating in, not hosting, but she'll be there on Monday the 27th to protest outside of the Supreme Court over the Roundup case, to let the Supreme Court and our elected representatives know we are not happy with the fact that they may very well soon be immune to suffering the appropriate consequences for giving everybody cancer. So very important that we encourage people to go out to that on Monday. But we're shifting topics a little bit here to Amazon, you know, our favorite company in the world, Mordor reborn. Emails show Amazon colluding with other firms to raise prices. California releases evidence of alleged Amazon price fixing scheme. What's this about, Tiffany?
So one of the things that we've talked about a lot when I come on your show is that the Trump administration has absolutely just not served the American people when it comes to antitrust. And this isn't just a Trump administration problem, right? It was happening in Trump's first term. It was happening during the Obama terms. We have antitrust laws in America, and when they were made after the 1920s crash, right, when the Sherman Antitrust Act was written, when all of the small antitrust acts were written, they were written in a way that made them the only set of laws in America that were considered so essential to the viability of our republic's long-term health that we as individuals are allowed to enforce them without the public office to help us. Huh. So like if somebody goes and steals a car, I can't prosecute them. Right. I can sue them civilly, but I can't prosecute them. I need a prosecutor to do that. The government has to do that. Antitrust laws are the only laws in the U.S. where citizens are allowed to prosecute them because they were considered that important. And over the last 30 years, really since Citizens United, we have seen the steady erosion of antitrust enforcement in this country. And we've seen in the Trump term right now, all of the good work that Lina Khan was doing. She was the best FTC chairperson we've had in decades. She took it very seriously, but you need multiple terms to actually get antitrust cases going. The discovery alone can drag them out for 8-10 years.
Right.
And with those cases, you can break up monopolies. We stopped breaking up monopolies. We haven't broken up a monopoly in 40 years,
right?
And right now, we're seeing all of these antitrust cases just fall apart. And one of the things that antitrust is supposed to do is prosecute cartel-like price-fixing schemes. Price-fixing is illegal. Not just in the states, not just in the federal government, everywhere in America, price fixing is illegal. We have several laws that deal with it. In this instance, Amazon was doing what we know they're doing. They were getting together with large distributors and saying, hey, we're not going to carry your products anymore because we think that the price needs to be higher and you're selling them too cheaply. We want the price to go up. We don't want you to sell them to us for more money. We want to sell them for more money. We want a higher profit margin. And they said, okay, charge whatever you want. And they said, no, we want all of the places that sell your products to raise their prices at the same time as us.
Right.
And so they went to these companies and told them that they would only keep their products in their stores online if they gave required pricing to all of their distributors.
Right.
So as an example, there were like pet food supplements they wanted to charge more for. They wanted a higher profit margin. People were making money. They had a good profit margin, and Amazon said, no, we can charge more, probably because the entire veterinary industry has been monopolized, so they can charge whatever they want.
Yep.
And they said, Chewy, we want you to raise your prices too. And they said, well, you're going to do it with us? And they said, let's raise them at the exact same time, the exact same amount. Now, it wasn't just Chewy. It was happening across a litany of thousands of products. But they were strategically working together not to respond to inflation. We all know it's not inflation. This is greedflation.
Yep.
This is systematically choosing to charge the American people more. And because they're controlling the entire market through monopoly, there's no competition to undercut them. And we have nowhere else to choose.
Yeah. So let me read this. This is from the LA Times. This is their story about this. California releases evidence of alleged Amazon price fixing scheme. So like, what you're pointing out, not only does Amazon already have almost a de facto monopolization of like certainly online retailers, they're collaborating with places like Walmart and brick and mortar stores to guarantee, because basically Amazon has to be competitive with them. And so they don't want to have a higher price than Walmart. So they, you know, reach out to make sure everybody's higher price. So this is what it says. Amazon wanted to sell Levi's Easy Khaki Classic Pants for $29.99, but Walmart had lowered the price and the giant online retailer had matched it at $25 to $26. But Amazon wasn't happy. It subsequently contacted Levi Strauss, asking the San Francisco apparel company to convince Walmart to raise its price, according to a document filed Monday in a price fixing case brought against Amazon by California Attorney General Rob Bonta. Not only did Walmart raise its price, but a Levi Strauss employee also emailed Amazon saying, quote, I'm really hoping we can show this as a proof case so we can resolve issues going forward. So yeah, they wanted to, you know, have this as a precedent set that they could do over and over. And as much as I don't really like the term greedflation, because I feel like it came about while inflation was really big, because the Biden administration just wanted people to blame the corporations and not the government. But that's what this is. I mean, this is greed. This is a upping of the price, not based on market reality, not based off of geopolitical situation, but based off of greed. They have an algorithm where they can see the maximum amount they can charge, and they want to get up to that maximum. So while I normally wouldn't use that phrase, I think greedflation is exactly what we're looking at here, as well as obviously the monopolization and the cartel-like behavior. I think you're exactly right.
And I want to explain to you why I use the word greedflation, because it's a word that I used to think was probably not accurate in the way I describe things. During COVID, it was the first time in American history, and it was during the Biden administration, but it started in the Trump administration, right? When we shut down all those small businesses.
Yep.
And allowed the most effective consolidation and elimination of competition in American history.
Yep.
And what happened was a very important shift happened during 2022 and 2023. Historically, going all the way back to when they started tracking it in 1900, of every dollar that a product price went up that they attributed to inflation, historically only 6 cents went to corporate profit. That has statistically always been the case, that the company would take a haircut to try to make sure it wasn't too hard on the American people, to try to make sure they wouldn't have to make too many cuts, to make sure that people could still keep buying their products. So they would make 6 cents in profit, but the whole dollar wasn't profit.
Right.
2022 to 2023, that shifted to 94 cents.
Whoa.
I don't know how you call that anything but greedflation.
Right.
We saw an inversion that only 6 cents was necessity and 94 cents was profit. How's that anything else? And this was across hundreds of industries, right? In the research studies that went into this. And when you look at that and you think about the fact that if we had not allowed this mass consolidation, these monopolies to be formed, that wouldn't have been an issue. Yeah. But we have nowhere else to shop. They've so effectively consolidated every industry in the country, right? We have 6 companies that own the entire world. We have no choices. And as a result of that, they can charge us whatever they want. And we have nowhere else to go. We think we're shopping around online, but we're shopping with BlackRock Series A shares versus BlackRock Series C shares.
Yep.
They're still all owned by BlackRock. And that's what we're dealing with.
That's exactly right. And I know we want to get into some private equity stuff here, but just as you're talking, and you might not even have anything to say about this, but I'm just wondering how all of this monop- you know, monopolization, because obviously what we saw under COVID was very well managed, well organized. I mean, it was the largest transfer of wealth from the middle class to the top 1% the world has ever seen. Trillions of dollars ripped out of our hands and put into their coffers. We all saw it, and it was on purpose. And now I see with the looming specter of like energy lockdowns and the Iran war cutting off fertilizer, I see everything falling into place again for another round of this type of consolidation. Just quickly, have you noticed anything like that? Are you seeing any signs that show that they're gearing up for another round of buying up these small businesses like they did last time?
I mean, pesticide immunity is a good example, but we're talking about immunity across a litany of different industries, because you and I are also about to talk about granting immunity to the fund managers that are going to steal your 401k and bail out billionaires with it, right? We're seeing it in real time, and there's not really a lot left to consolidate. I'm going to be very honest with you. There's very little competition left in almost any industry in the United States. Almost everything is run by the same handful of corporations, and people serve on 24 boards, but they're all supposedly competing with one another. Our antitrust regulators don't do their jobs, and our members of Congress don't do enough to force the proper updates to the antitrust laws that we need, right? We just saw it. The Trump administration just secretly had their attorney general show up the morning of the Live Nation antitrust trial to break up Live Nation on behalf of the Swifties, and he walked in. The prosecutor for the DOJ was at the table ready to proceed, and no one told him that somebody just a little higher than him had settled with Live Nation for a couple hundred million the night before.
Right. Right.
Well, guess what? The states kept going with it and they won their case, which means that the government would have won their case. They just didn't want to. Why? Because Live Nation spent tens of millions of dollars to make sure it wouldn't happen. That was a cost of doing business, baby, to keep their monopoly. And because the feds weren't involved, it won't be broken up now. The states can't break them up. Only the feds can.
Right.
They can
right.
penalize them a whole bunch, but they can't break them up.
Wow. Yeah. And of course, we talked about that because last time we talked, it was right before that happened. And we were both saying like some of these other cases, that would be another just bombshell home run, knock it out of the park win for the Trump administration. They could point to all the young people in America and say, hey, we just saved you buckets of money. Go out and see live shows. Enjoy yourself on us. You're welcome, Donald J. Trump. I mean, that could have been a bombshell for Trump, which again, it's like he just didn't want to. I guess they just didn't want to. They had better priorities. It's
I mean,
absurd.
I feel like this. I'm going to say the very unpopular thing right now. He's made $6 billion in a year. Harrison, the lame duck here is not working for anything at this point.
No.
In my opinion, if there's money attached to it, he's just. I can't. I don't have a way to defend anything.
Yep.
I just don't.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either, and I'm done trying to figure out if there's some sort of angle I'm missing on this. I don't think I'm missing any angles. No, I think it's actually pretty clear cut. They're working on the side of the corporations that are rapaciously, you know, desperate to steal as much as they possibly can. So, yeah, it sucks, but that's just where we are. And, you know, it's time we had some bipartisan opposition to the way that we're being raked over the coals like this. So getting into private equity, I mean, every time we talk and every time I open up the internet, it seems like they've moved on to some new horrible thing that's going to ruin the world for everybody. And I imagine today's no different. Tiffany, what do you have for us in the private equity realm?
Okay, so we're going to talk private equity and we're going to talk private credit simultaneously. They're deeply intertwined and both of them are tied to Trump's executive order from a few months ago. So we came on your show trying to stop that executive order. This is the executive order that grants 401ks, supposedly it was pitched as democratizing investment for the average investor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that it was delivered to the American people. What that executive order actually did was it really didn't change anything. You could always invest your 401k in private equity. You could always invest your 401k in private credit. You could always invest it in crypto. The only reason that your fund manager would refuse to do it is because you could sue them if they lost your money because it was considered such a scary investment. So you could sue them. So what the executive order actually did was command the Department of Labor and the SEC to write new rules that would make it so that they got immunity from your ability to sue them when they lose all your money, strip mining you to hand it over as a bailout to these billionaires that are literally, their bubble is popping in real time right now. And that's why when I come on here, I talk about this. Well, when he issued the executive order, he gave them 4 months to make the new rulemaking process to give this immunity to these fund managers so that you can't protect your assets anymore. And that rulemaking process has begun. And we need to step in right now. We need to stop it.
Okay, so what do we need to stop about it exactly? And this is this concerning both the private credit and the private equity, or is this just private equity in this point?
So the executive order was very specific. It said private equity, private credit, and crypto. Okay, so it's all three. They're intertwined. All right, and they're all considered too risky. But the private equity and private credit both come with that 2 and 20 model you and I have talked about, where no matter how much you invest, you will never make more money than you could in standard investments. It will just strip mine your wealth away and give it to billionaires. It will reduce the value of what you would have made no matter how well it performs, because the fee management structure at anything less than $10 million will always cost you more than the benefit you would have had, right? And so you could sue under the old rules. And you would say, you invested my, you knew the fees, you knew I wouldn't make as much money, you invested it anyway, or you had a conflict of interest, or you got a handout or a kickback, or you got some crazy commission and invested my money, I'm suing you. It fell under a type of laws called ERISA laws, E-R-I-S-A. ERISA laws happened the first several times that fund managers tried to invest 401ks and lost them in private equity. And those class action ERISA laws are what have kept 401ks safe from private equity until now. So Trump is trying to grant immunity, just like in Bear Monsanto, to these big corporations so that they can invest their money to shore up their now underperforming private equity portfolios and private credit portfolios with American 401k money. And 401ks won't know they've lost their money for a decade, right? Till they're about ready to retire and realize they've lost everything. And you won't be able to sue because of these new rules. So every time that an American regulator or regulatory agency wants to pass a new rule, it has to go through a rulemaking process. And most people don't know about that. And that's because companies have paid to make it intentionally difficult to navigate. But during any rulemaking process, Americans are allowed to give public comment for 60 days. Well, right now we have two public comment periods that just opened about these laws. Okay, first we have the SEC and the CFTC. Now, if you're not familiar with those, most people know what the Securities Exchange Commission is. That's the SEC. But the CFTC is the Commodities Futures Trading, right? They just got together and issued a joint recommendation that private credit managers no longer have to engage in any reporting at $150 million, which is what it used to be. You and I talked about this, right? That used to be considered a large investment.
Right.
Was $150 million in assets under management. Their new proposed rule increases that to $1 billion. This also has implications for the housing investments, because remember, it's only large investors that are going to be locked out. The small investors, they can keep buying houses.
Right.
They can keep buying them. Well, this changes that definition from small investors at under 150 million in assets and large investors over 150 million. To be a large investor now, you have to have $1 billion in assets under management.
Wow.
And so as a result, if this rule goes through, we will have less oversight than we already have in what is an almost entirely opaque process. Simultaneously, at the Department of Labor, we have a rulemaking process that has just opened that is calling for public comment, and we only have 60 days. So on both of these rules, we have until June 1st, okay? And over at the Department of Labor, their proposed rule is to make it unlawful for class action lawsuits to be formed under the ERISA lawsuit standard if your fund manager has done moderate due diligence in investing where they were going to put your money, which means they read a prospectus and they said, this looks good to me, and they invest your money. If they did moderate diligence, even if they knew the funds, like the fees were going to be too high, even if they knew that there was a likelihood of risk, even if they took a kickback, even if their personal investments are in there, even if they got taken on a whirlwind trip for a cruise to go talk about it on the water where there's no laws in international waters, if they did moderate due diligence, we can no longer sue them. They have immunity. So these two rulemaking processes allow us to give public comment. And the last time that I called on my audience to get loud in these rulemaking processes, we got a rule passed that protected small businesses from retaliation by private equity firms. And it happened. We did that. In 3 days, we got 5,500 comments put through.
Wow.
And we made that rulemaking process reality. Nobody had even responded until we drew attention to it, because most often, because of the way it's been lobbied for, these rulemaking processes are buried 20 links deep and no one can find them.
Right.
Well, I am telling you guys that your voice matters, and we need to flood these comment periods, because there has to be a nonpartisan analysis of what the American public asks for in the comments before they're allowed to pass these rules. And I am screaming, I am begging, I am pleading for every American in the United States. We need to demand that these rules not pass. We do not give immunity to people that poorly invest your 401k to bail out billionaires at these private equity and private credit firms that have made bad investments, that have over leveraged these investments with debt, that can't move these balances off their balance sheets. We need to stop it. Those ERISA laws were put there to keep your investment safe, and they have done so for decades. Yeah. It took decades of lobbying and then one very large check to get this done.
Mm.
And we have to stop it. And you guys need to be loud. Everyone watching this show, in addition to, I know I tell you guys always, email your fund manager, tell them you do not authorize investments in private equity, private credit, or crypto with your funds, that you're removing any permission to do that. Simultaneously, we're going to go, and we are going to call on the American people to take part in this rulemaking process. Drop your public comments in. We need to flood it, because I promise you, the lobby groups for these industries are paying huge money to have massive bot farms go in and do the same thing in the other direction.
Yep, absolutely.
We've got to break through those firewalls and be louder than them.
Yeah, and look, you know, nobody likes frivolous lawsuits. Obviously, the yep. you know, legal process can be abused these days, but the threat of a lawsuit is a control mechanism that stops these people from taking risks. They have to know that if they make a bad decision, it's going to come down on their head. You remove that, there's no other process. There's nothing else limiting their behavior. The lawsuits are the only thing that they have to worry about. It's the only thing that we can do at this point. If that gets taken away, there's nothing else. So we got 2 minutes here. Walk us through. How do people leave comments? Where do they go? And what should they say?
So I'm going to go post the comment links underneath this link, but I know you guys reuse this hour all weekend, so I'll get you guys the links. What you're going to do is you're going to go to the two different links, and you're going to go in to add public comment and say, I do not support this rulemaking process. As an American citizen, I want my 401k protected. I don't believe in immunity for billionaires. I don't believe in immunity for these big Wall Street fund managers. I do not support this. Simultaneously, we do not support increasing the reporting threshold for these very high value hedge fund and private equity fund managers. We do not support increasing the reporting threshold from $150 million to $1 billion. I want to stress that means that until a private equity firm has $1 billion, not just that they control, but that they're openly controlling, they can hide it.
Right.
Until they openly control $1 billion, the government's not allowed to ask them any questions.
Yeah.
Even if your 401ks are being used.
Yeah. And again, we talked about this last time, but just so people understand, like when Trump said, I'm going to stop big private equity from buying up houses, that's the caveat. That's the little star. Private equity can still buy up houses. It's just they have to be under $1 billion. So it's insane. Like, yes, obviously people with $150 million, I would consider that fairly large, but the law doesn't. So SEC, yeah. FTC, you got to call out and oppose what they're trying to do here. So I love this, because Tiffany, you're always coming and, you know, we joke that you're the bubbly fairy of doom, but like what you're bringing here today are two very pertinent and really easy calls to action. If you're in DC, go protest in front of the Supreme Court against the immunity for glyphosate. That's on Monday, the 27th of April in Washington, D.C., outside of the Supreme Court. And then here, this is even easier. This is like nothing. This will take you 2 minutes. Click on your phone. Easy as pie, but it'll be very effective. There's no reason not to do this. Go comment. They're open for public comment. We have a few days to do it. Go now. Find Tiffany Cianci on X, and she'll post the links there. I will repost them. Follow Tiffany on X at The Vino Mom, TheVinoMom, and her website, TiffanyCianci.com. Incredible stuff as always, Tiffany. This is just great. And I'm so glad there are people like you organizing this and helping to push back, because we have to realize that we have the power to change things. We do not have to be subject to this stuff.
I'll see you Monday from the People versus Poison Rally, everybody.
I can't wait. I'll be watching the live stream and there with you in spirit. Tiffany Cianci, thank you so much for being with us. Absolutely incredible stuff. That's going to be it for us, folks. We'll see you on Monday for the final week of InfoWars War Room broadcast. It's the end of an age. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to make sure the next age is even better.
Coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors. And that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and you're being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. This is personally one of my favorite shirts in the new line. Now, here's the classic InfoWars logo on a white shirt. Never done black on white. Seems like we should have. Looks great. Got the 1776 on the shoulder. You are literally funding and supporting and wearing your uniform in the fight to defeat the globalists. InfoWars is 28 years old. America's 250. And look at the back of this clean shirt. USA 250, 1776 forever. Semi-quintennial. That means 250, baby. America's birthday with badass hats as well. And then, of course, we've got the new limited edition, America at 250 years old. And the back of these shirts are amazing Americana. And I designed this, the Betsy Ross flag with 250 on it. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm back because I forgot one point that I want to be very clear about. This is a fundraiser. We need funds to continue on and the new operation. It's urgent. These are historic shirts. You've taken the InfoWar this far. Please take action now. For those of you who have been on the fence over body thing, thealexjonesstore.com, but have shared links and things, I appreciate you. But come on, folks. We're the tip of the spear. We need you. We need your support. You're the tip of the spear. Thank you so much.